everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing very well, and I'm excited. Like, it's just over a week until the premiere itself, and in less than a week, I will be in Boston getting ready for that. So, yeah, really excited for this season and for everything to just start kicking off properly.
Yeah, Dom, you're going to be in America for not only just the premiere, but for the first couple of weeks of the season. You're going to be in Boston for the premiere. I know you're going to be at the Live Know-It-Alls. I'm going to be at both of those with you. I'm sure you're going to be doing something for episode two as well. Are you excited for your first dive into, like, the live Survivor authentic experience?
I am. You guys collectively have really messed things up recently, so I'm being sent over to restore some order.
This is the first time that you're ever going to watch Survivor on a Wednesday. This is, you know, it's always Thursday early yeah. in the morning that you're watching Survivor as it airs live.
Yeah, like the one time I was in the States or any kind of close time zone before, the season hadn't actually started yet. So this is the first time I'm actually watching it with the rest of humanity.
Nice. Very exciting. Well, Dom, we are back today to be previewing the second tribe of Survivor Season 34, Game Changers. We have already done a pretty exhaustive, comprehensive preview of the Mana tribe. We did not even intend to split it into two separate parts, but by the time we were done with them, we were already like close to 3 hours through our recording session, and so we decided that it's just best for everyone if we space it out a little bit. I was gone for the weekend, but I am, like you, very, very excited to be back here and to be getting into all of this today.
Yeah, that was exhaustive and exhausting, and we did not plan to have a week break between the two segments, but hopefully we can get through this today and have that up in good time for the premiere.
Yeah, so if you missed that, definitely be on the lookout for that. And then the only other thing that I think we want to be getting to before we just dive into this Nuku tribe, which I'm very excited to do, is something we can't even get into the specifics of quite yet, but there is going to be, I think it should be out before the season premiere happens, one more podcast coming from us before we end up seeing how all of this season 34 starts to play out. So definitely be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, nothing too special, mostly our usual fare, but it's mostly interesting for who else is involved in it. So that's going to be a collaborative thing, which I think could be pretty interesting.
Okay, so definitely look forward to that, I suppose. And I think if you are all set, let's get into this Nuku tribe. And the way that we are going to be doing it is exactly the same way we did before, which is Dom is going to be drawing names randomly out of a plastic dishwashing basin because he does not own a hat to draw names out of.
Yeah, the basin is making its glorious or not so glorious return, and unless you have anything else, we can get right to it.
Well, I think we should. It would be prudent, at least, to just run down the 10 people that we are going to be talking about today. The Nuku tribe is comprised of Andrea Belke, Ceree Fields, Debbie Wanner, Sarah Lucina, Sierra Don Thomas, fan favorite game changer, Brad Culpepper, JT Thomas, close relative of Sierra, Ozzy. I've never been clear on that. I don't know how to say his last name. Ty Trang and Zeke Smith. So very exciting stuff to be getting into. Yeah.
Yeah. JT Thomas, right out of the ATM machine school of word use there. But more on that when we get to it, I'm sure. So those are the 10 names in the hat. And the first name, the 10 names in the basin. And the first name out of the basin is.
Oh, boy.
We're starting with a good one here. So Andrea Belke.
Okay. Interesting. Andrea. Frankly, Andrea might be the one person out of this entire group that I am the most uncertain of, like that I feel like there is the biggest kind of range in very conceivable outcomes for, where I feel like it wouldn't shock me at all if Andrea is one of the early boots. It wouldn't shock me at all if she goes pretty far with a decent chance to win, and it wouldn't shock me at all if she's the winner. I could see this going a ton of different ways for Andrea, and I know that that is probably the least insightful commentary that I could offer to begin this podcast with, but I genuinely feel that, like, I have absolutely no idea how this is going to go for Andrea. She is the one of the ones that I am by far the most curious about.
Yeah, in Jeff's cast assessment, he says of Tony, he's either going to be the one of the first out or he's going to make a deep run. Yeah, really insightful there, Jeff. Thanks for not hedging your bets. But yeah, I think with Andrea, that is actually a legitimate view to take, because I think she comes into the season in a great position, both just as a player and also given who else is on her tribe, who else is on the season. And I think she can really make it. I think the season is going to be what she makes of it. And I'm excited to see what she can do with that.
Right. I definitely don't think that Andrea is someone I'm ever going to say to myself, oh, she's going to go out there and do a bad job. Like, I have faith in her to not be in there with a real chance. But simultaneously, I'm not going to go in there and be saying to myself, oh, she's definitely going to be among the front runners. Although maybe I did say that entering Karamoan. I definitely could be on the record having said that entering Karamoan.
I could easily say it again by the time we're done, I'm sure. But yeah, Andrea is kind of like Malcolm in a way. And I think she and Malcolm are two of the front runners on the season because she has all of those qualities in just enough depth. So she's pretty good in challenges. She's social enough. She's strategic enough. And so unless she really makes some horrific blunder early or someone just randomly targets her for some reason, then she's going to stick around for quite a while, I would hope. And then once she gets into this decent position, she can really maneuver within that to find a path to the end. And I don't know. It feels almost inevitable that something will go wrong at some point, right? There will be some dramatic crash and burn, but it feels like it shouldn't. It feels like this should be the season that Andrea can close it out.
Right, and I would have said basically that exact same thing about Tyson Apostle entering the season that he won, Blood versus Water. Of like, it feels like this should go. It feels like it should at some point crumble around him. And I would argue, I really feel like if Tyson drew that bad rock, like he had the $1 million right there for him, if he had just drawn that bad rock, I feel like that would have been the more fitting kind of like end to Tyson's survivor story after getting blindsided so brutally his first time and then essentially voting himself out the second time. If he basically had that $1 million won, if he just flashes his immunity idol, he doesn't even have to stick his hand in the bag in the first place. I feel like that would have been a much more poetic ending. But I'm totally with you about Andrea, where even in the most optimistic timelines for me, where I feel like Andrea does find like a great social and political footing in the game, there is that lingering feeling of like, how is this going to get turned on her? Like, how is this going to twist around? And that's something that I just can't overlook to the point that I'm willing to call her one of the front runners. But you did call her one of the front runners. And as we were quickly talking before starting this, I was just doing some quick research, as we'll get to when we talk about Ozzy. Ozzy has a chance to be the first person ever to make the merge four different times. And we were thinking of just the people who've made the merge three times, and you said Andrea has a very good chance of joining that club. It seems like you were thinking Ariel pointing up in general for Andrea.
Yeah, I can imagine, let's say she plays really hard for the first few rounds, and then after the swap, things just get turned over on her because of how hard she's been playing, and then she becomes the one person who, in retrospect, everyone says was screwed over by the swap. But if she's able to avoid that, then yeah, I think she's almost, it feels weird to compare it to Amanda Kimmel, but like it's the same kind of argument, right? Like, how is Amanda not making the merge unless something goes just terribly, unforeseeably wrong?
Right, but I think Andrea, I think people are generally, her opponents, specifically on this season, I would imagine, would generally be more sketched out by her than Amanda's opponents ever would be.
Yeah, and that's a key distinguishing feature, and that's the reason why I love the fact that she came back for Karamoan, the fact that I love the fact that she's coming back here, and she's going to be great on any season she's on because of that fact that she is just so polarizing, even without trying to be. Like, she has that Candace quality of like people just seem to have strong opinions about her before they've even met her sometimes. So you look at the answers in the Josh Wiggler interviews, like Vanna says he absolutely loves her. You know, JT's on board. Sierra likes her. She seems to be the only person that Sierra likes, other than like the 2-time winners. But then you look on the other side, Ozzy and Sarah are really sketched out by her. Caleb sees her as a new Amber potentially, which you think is more his own problem, but there you go. And then
which Amber is he talking about?
Well, and then Debbie, we'll get to Debbie in due course. I think Ty actually had the best answer purely because of how non-committal it is. He said, I don't know Andrea, but she interviewed me once. She seems okay. I don't know how she plays, which is a very honest assessment. Like, I like that Ty is not pretending to know or care more than he does. He's just, you know, he's just out there doing his thing. But then, like, Sierra was sketched out by her. Haley was wary of her, and so was Sandra. And that seems to be the common theme that we identified before, was it seemed like the other younger women seemed to be a bit wary of her. I mean, Sierra seems to be the exception there, but like that seems to be the demographic which historically she hasn't got along with, and which maybe has good reason to fear how she might perceive them.
Well, I mean, I think in Redemption Island, she seemed tight with Natalie Tenorelli and Ashley Underwood, but I think she was third wheeling pretty hard there.
She never really seemed tight with them, though, right? Like, she wanted to be the third wheel, but she could never quite fit in. And then she was, like, more gravitating towards Rob and Grant, but then it obviously made sense to move away from them at the end. So she was kind of left without any clear group to turn towards. And then in Karen Moran, I guess you had like, Cochran, and then Dawn was older, and they had this pre-existing thing, so that kind of made sense. But then she was feuding with Brenda pretty hard, so that does seem to be the trend that you can point to.
Yeah. Well, Andrea herself is saying, quote, "I'm obsessed with Ceri. Please let me be in an alliance with her." I think that could be something we end up seeing, is she maybe, like we saw with Parvati and Amanda in Fans versus Favorites, it looks like Ceri can get along with that younger, smart and active game player female archetype pretty well. I could see Andrea filling that role.
But this is what I'm talking about. So you look at Ceri's interview, and she says, purely based on the body language that she's getting at Ponderosa, she thinks that Andrea hates her and wants her out first. And it's like, I don't know what it is. She has some kind of aura, maybe, but it has its effect on people. And so even beyond the fact that she's, you know, she's good TV, and she always plays hard, and she's given the challenges and so on, and that's why you always want her back. It's because she causes drama without trying to, and to me that's better than trying to cause drama and not doing it very convincingly.
Yeah, I'm definitely into bringing Andrea back for a third time, absolutely. Looking forward to seeing how this goes. Well, go for it.
Bringing her back for a second time, you mean, but yeah, okay, continue.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, who returned from Redemption Island from...
Yeah, okay, yeah, mea culpa. Sorry, carry on.
Okay, but yeah, so for me at least, I would say Andrea would not be in my top tier of winners, but is she in there for you, like someone that you think is in there with one of the better shots to win?
I think so, and I know after Redemption Island, like Jeff was saying at the time, okay, Andrea at 21, 22, however old she was then, maybe didn't have just a life experience to do well in the game at that point. But then Andrea at 28 or 29, which is that sweet spot that we always talk about, might really be a serious threat. And now she's coming in at 27, I believe, and like she's had this like hosting job for the past few years, which I'm sure must be very competitive and always having to deal with lots of different types of people. So yeah, I think she's much more well equipped than she was going into Karen Moran, and I thought she was actually in with a decent shot there as well.
Okay. Is anyone standing out to you on this tribe as someone that you could see her working really well with? Because as I'm looking through here, other than being an extra vote for Ceri, I don't know who, like in that timeline where she is potentially filling that new Parvati and Amanda spot, I don't see a ton of totally great options for her on this tribe. I guess Zeke, I think, one possibility.
You mean the guy who she already knows in real life and probably has a secret alliance with coming into the season might be a good starting point?
Well, I was wondering what the timeline was on... I didn't watch Survivor Brooklyn, but I know they were both on it. But was that before this season filmed or after this season filmed or what?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the timeline is on when Survivor Brooklyn filmed and when it was released. So, if it was far back enough, in theory, people could have seen that, recognize Zeke, and then know who he is coming to the season and know that Andrea already knows him. But, like, unless you had watched that, and I don't see why any of them would have done, not to throw shade on Survivor Brooklyn, but it's not the kind of thing you just stumble across, so I don't think they're going to get recognized. But if they did, that would be fantastic. And I don't know how they could even acknowledge that in the context of the season. Because they, like, do they want to break the fourth wall like that and reference some, like, homemade, basement version of Survivor? I don't think they do.
There's 0% that ever gets brought up, of course. But look at the rest of this tribe.
Right, it would be like if someone recognized Colton from an org or something. Like, they're never going to bring that into their universe.
Right, but look at, the rest of this tribe is Ceri, Debbie, Sarah, Sierra Dawn Thomas, Brad Culpepper, JT, Ozzy, and Ty. There is no chance any of them are going to recognize Zeke.
I think Ty's been doing his homework. He says he hasn't, but yeah, but behind the glasses, I think there's something brewing there. But yeah, so they're going to have something good coming in. The issue is, like, you get there on day one, and Andrew and Zeke are already, like, huddled together talking. Like, you're going to think something's amiss, right?
I would imagine so. Like, I could definitely see that being, especially amid this group, a Spencer and Shireen situation where those two just go off into the woods and are talking strategy all the time by themselves and totally ostracize themselves.
I also wonder, because there's been a lot of people saying, and I think we're going to agree with this, that Zeke seems like he could be an early target on this group. And so Andrea might be faced with this tough decision quickly of, do I try and stick up for the one guy who I know and maybe possibly trust? Or do I just cut him loose and try and establish trust with the group that way?
Well, the good news for Zeke is that Andrea has always chosen to stick with her off-island friends, and no controversy has ever come up from her betraying any of her New York people. So that's definitely a positive sign for Zeke.
Absolutely. So we get the vibe that you think this tribe is pretty bad for her.
The more I'm looking at it, yeah, that is definitely the impression that I'm getting.
Yeah, I kind of cut myself off in midstream there, but I think JT and Ozzy could also be other options for her. So she said of JT that in her first audition video, she mentioned JT, he was her favorite player, and she actually said, quote, "Take that, JT," while I was walking through Camanior, which I guess is a nice way to pay tribute to someone. And then Ozzy just seems like the type that she could gravitate towards, and Andrea certainly seems like the type that Ozzy would gravitate towards, so that could be a decent pairing there. But I think that is going to be one possible route to success for her. Just find one of these like strong alpha males and then kind of use them as a shield while she can do her magic behind the scenes.
I think it's actually an interesting situation where we have, I would say, these three guys in JT, Brad Culpepper, and Ozzy, who may want to come together and be the guys who are focused on challenges and winning. And I think it's going to largely come down to where Ceree falls with regard to that potential like grouping. And I think Andrea, the key to her success is going to be making sure she's on the right side of that potential conflict.
Yeah, because the reason that people were so scared for Ceree on this tribe was you have Culpepper, JT, and Ozzy, who seem to be all about this, all about the challenges, but more generally, more about a specific vision of what a survivor player should look like. And I think Andrea, Ceree certainly doesn't fit into that mold for them. I think Andrea does. And if it is some like bro down between those guys, Andrea could be one of the guys, right? She could fit in there and be a pretty core member of that group.
Yeah. So I think that's probably going to be one of the themes that we return to, is that that potential conflict, I suppose, on this tribe between how Ceree ends up reconciling being not great at the challenges with taking majority on this tribe.
Yeah, so she says that in her first season, she was too inactive and didn't realize what was going on. In her second season, she overcorrected for that and was too aggressive to the point where she got blindsided because people didn't trust her anymore. And then this season, she's trying to take a middle course. And everyone's going to say that, right? But it's nice that she's aware of how she's made mistakes in the past and how she needs to correct for that.
Yeah.
Of course, that can all go out the window on day two and she could be the first boot. But I don't know. I have some amount of faith in her to do that, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I would probably say Andrea, if I had to say yes or no, I would say yes, she does make the merge for the third time, I guess.
Yeah, she seems like someone who could adapt to this new metagame of like trust clusters and voting blocks and whatever it's going to be called this season, which I really hope it doesn't get a new name because I had it up to here with it already. But she talks about this too. She says, quote, "Both times I played, I was on seasons where it was very much, this is our alliance. The thing about that is, if you're in that alliance, you can't really go up and talk to anyone. It's very effective, but it's very boring, even to watch or even to be in. I think this game will be a little more towards voting blocks, but I'm traditional in the sense that I'm going to want solid alliances. I believe in sub-alliances. You have to have a solid crew of 5 or 6 people who are going to stick together." And we were speculating that this season might be a return to not an exact old-school mentality, but this might slow down a bit after the very fast pace we've seen recently. And Andrea, she could like accidentally be in exactly the right mindset for that.
I think you're definitely right about that. And I frankly think it's probably overblown, the voting blocks and trust clusters, etc. Like, I know I'm not the first to point this out, and I know Adam made a big point of this when talking about his own game in Millennials versus Gen X, where it's like, yes, we were talking all about trust clusters, but in his mind, he had an alliance. Like, that was not anything that was up in the air to him. And I think Jeremy would probably say similar things, even though he won the season that, you know, voting blocks was like the big takeaway from.
Yeah, the other example I might bring up was the Philippines, and I think Malcolm's presence on that season really helped to usher in that new era of thinking about the game in that way. And like on that season, okay, there was a lot of craziness immediately after the merge, but then the way that Malcolm and Denise really cemented their hold on the game was teaming up with Scoop and Lisa and forming like this solid group that was able to just pick off everyone after that point. So yeah, I think that's a good mindset to have, and she could be well set up to do it.
Yeah, definitely. So I am good on Andrea, if you want to dive back into the basin.
All right, next up we have Ty. Okay, Ty is going to be a pretty quick one, I think, but he is one of the more unique characters on the cast, so it's worth at least touching on him.
Yeah, Ty, to reference RHAP, Rob had a funny story about, like, running into Ty at, so it might have been, like, the Millennials versus Gen X finale, or maybe, I don't know when it was, but he was like, hey, Ty, you know, if you're just back out there, you know, just pull your weight around camp and don't go off looking for challenges and don't be off being sketchy. Just be friendly to people and you're going to be doing just fine. And Ty said to Rob, like, yeah, that's what everyone keeps telling me, which is a very different answer than, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm totally on board.
Yeah, that's what everyone keeps telling me. And I'm going to do whatever I want. You know, I'm just not listening to anyone. Yeah, so Ty... No one's going to see Ty as a threat, right? Like, even the people who say, oh, I'm not going to trust Ty, or I didn't really like him on his season, whatever. No one's going to be coming in there gunning for Ty. So I think Ty can just sit there and do whatever he wants and maybe get noticed around, like, day 14 or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I think if Ty did go in there and just hang out, I think he would be quite high, if not number one on the list of, like, safest people to just make it to the merge. Like, no one is going for Ty.
So the possible issue there, right, is, again, if it comes down to we're the strong guys and we're great in challenges, Ty is not a strong guy and he's not great in challenges. And we saw, like, the reason his storyline was so compelling in Koh Rong was that contrast between how he conducted himself and how Scott and Jason conducted themselves. And I worry that we could see a similar contrast here between, like, Ty and Culpepper, or, well, maybe not Ty and Culpepper, but, like, Ty and... Although, the more I'm saying it, the more I could see, like, Ozzy taking a liking to Ty, or, like, JT thinking, all right, this is a guy that I can use to my own devices. So, yeah, as I'm saying it, I'm convincing myself that it's not going to be an issue.
Right, I mean, Caleb, I don't know that there have been many people entering a season of Survivor, certainly as a first-timer, that we have had a more negative impression of than Caleb, to say the absolute least. As he was entering Koh Rong, I never would have thought that he and Ty would hit it off at all. But they seem to get along totally fine. And so, yeah, I think Ty is definitely in there with a solid chance. But I also feel like Ty is going to be viewed as someone that is going to be very tough to be filling in with any kind of critical information. Like, if I was out there playing, I would want to be prioritizing finding people that I could actually be bouncing ideas off of. And Ty would be very near the bottom of that list, because Ty is about as unreliable as it gets as far as keeping sensitive things to himself, short of, like, Brandon Hance.
At the same time, though, if you just want a loyal vote, someone that you know is probably not going to wander too far off the reservation or try to stab you in the back the moment they hear something, I think Ty's a good bet for that, at least compared to half the other people in the cast.
If you can keep him on your side without having to get... I would just be so reluctant, I guess, is the point, to tell him virtually anything that I thought was remotely sensitive. Like, I have absolutely no faith in Ty, based on Koh Rong, to really, frankly, think much before he speaks when he's playing Survivor. And that's a huge, huge problem for me if I'm another person out there potentially thinking about it, bringing him in as an ally.
Yeah, so one thing that was brought up by Michelle in her Inside Survivor segment on Ty was the language barrier, which is an issue which 99% of castaways just never have to deal with. But for Ty, it was an issue, and according to Michelle, it was a serious issue, just in the way that he communicated around camp in terms of building trust. And then when he got to the end, just making that case to the jury in that kind of environment is already difficult, but especially if it's your second language and you can't convey those ideas in a way that makes sense to them. So do you see that being an issue again here for Ty?
Yeah, I definitely do. This is something... I don't even remember how much we hit on this as we were podcasting about Koh Rong, but yes, I definitely think this is a major, major problem for Ty. Just if we're being frank about his chances of winning a Survivor season, overcoming the language barrier, like, he is just not capable of making really compelling pitches to people. Like, I genuinely think that's a big problem, especially when he's going to be playing against such capable players.
Yeah, at the risk of simplifying things too far myself, it feels like the effect that barrier has is to force you to simplify your ideas. So you can't use, like, elaborate words or concepts. You can't really go into much detail. It's about just, like, very simple, direct messaging, which in a way is good because it means you're staying on topic and you can't, like, get yourself into any traps. But at the same time, it makes it very easy for someone to out-talk you or make a case that's more convincing than your just kind of simple bullet point analysis.
Yeah. Can I get into a quick sidebar, just because we've never talked about this on air, and we should have talked about it as we were talking about the other – or no, I guess they're split up here. But another language-related question that I know we talked about briefly off-air the other day, but I wanted to get into it a little bit. We have a scenario here where both Sandra and Ozzy are fluent in Spanish. Should they be allowed, if not, if a situation presents itself, like mid-tribal council, to be able to just talk in, openly in Spanish, just knowing that no one else could, probably no one else is going to understand them?
Yeah, why not?
Well, I think the reason why not, and this is, like, I'm not trying to sound racist at all. It's because the reason I bring it up and the reason that the question crossed my mind in the first place is you will not find any poker room in the country where you are allowed to speak anything but English at the table. The rule is everywhere English only, because it is a huge advantage if you are able to collude in front of everyone without them understanding.
Well, that's because rules against collusion are baked into the game of poker. I mean, that's the point of having an individual game. On Survivor, I don't see what the issue is. I don't see how it's different from taking someone... I guess like at Tribal specifically, or any kind of public forum, it could be an issue. But I don't see how it's different from like people agreeing on a code before Tribal to, like, if we're going to switch a vote to this person, then I'm going to say this word at some point or something like that.
Right, but that's why I said at Tribal, in the middle of a public forum. That's why I specified they have... they just both happen to speak Spanish. It's not a survivor tactic.
Is that more unfair than like Adam whispering to Hannah in a way that no one else can hear?
Yes, of course. They can do efforts? It. They don't have to be next to each other. They can do it from anywhere.
Okay, but I'm not seeing. I guess you can make it a case that like it's bad for a primarily English-speaking audience from a TV point of view.
But I'm saying at all. I'm saying from a fairness point of view.
Yeah, let me finish. I know it's not what you're saying, but I'm saying that's the only argument that makes sense to me. I don't think that there's any problem from a fairness point of view.
Okay.
We'll see.
I'm not even saying I'm taking the hard stance against them being allowed. I definitely... see what you're saying as far as why they should be allowed to, but I also definitely wouldn't say this is an open and shut case. Of course they should be allowed to communicate in Spanish. I think there is a very real question that needs to be addressed about it.
What you guys can't say at the moment is Colin is wearing the John Rocker Speak English t-shirt, which he busts out from time to time when he's feeling especially racist. I really don't see the issue there. Like, if anything, it could add like a fun little twist where like Sandra could just say something completely meaningless to Ozzy as a way to get people paranoid or like to like bluff or double bluff. Like that actually adds an interesting dimension to the game that as a strategic analyst or whatever, I would think you would be in favor of.
Okay, I am not staunchly saying they shouldn't be allowed to do it. I'm just saying I think it is definitely a question. And to clarify, I would have absolutely no problem if it's just the two of them by themselves. Speak all the Spanish you want. That's not influencing anything else for anyone else. But it is such a preposterous advantage at a potential tribal council scenario.
So vote one of them out then. I mean, anyone in the game has certain advantages, and I don't see why Sandra and Ozzy speaking a different language is any more unfair to the game than like Ozzy being very good at challenges or Sandra apparently being so good at Survivor that she just wins it every single time she plays.
And again, I am for the fifth time definitely not saying hard no. I just think it's an interesting conversation to have, and definitely could see it going either way. I would not object if they said you have to speak English when it's a public forum, because it's so unfair to the other players. And yeah, so okay, whatever. That was a really worthwhile and exciting sidebar.
Well, what were we even talking about before?
We were talking about Ty, I believe. Ty.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What were we saying about Ty? You've just derailed the entire thing.
We were talking about the language barrier.
Very topical, yeah. I think that does stand to be an issue. And like when I asked you, do you think that's going to be an issue on this season? It was kind of a stupid question, really, because it inherently is going to be an issue on every season, right?
Right.
That's a really tough spot for Ty. Like, there's nothing you can really do to overcome that either.
No, I totally agree. I think Ty is not going to be in there among my front runners to be winning, to say the absolute least. Like, I get why they brought Ty back, certainly, as far as if you're going to do this season and it filmed so quickly after Ko Rong and he was such a fun hero in there, and Mark the Chicken was so great, and I guess that's another side. We could go down that part, like, what's the new chicken's name going to be?
Let's on this season, let's absolutely not go down any chicken-related tomfoolery, please. I've had more than enough of that. But Yeah, I think Ty, unless he does have this sudden transformation into Tyzenberg, it is just going to be a vote for a more active player to use and kind of move around on the board.
Yeah, although I definitely hope that he starts doing some kind of badass stuff, because I really want Tyzenberg to become a thing.
I hope that whichever chicken he takes under his wing ends up just, like, brutally slaughtered in some, like, Sandra-style revenge campaign.
Dude, it's all coming together. He's running Los Pollos Hermanos. It's all making sense.
Yeah, and Sandra and Ozzy are working for him, like, they're translators. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
But I can imagine, like, let's say... like Sandra's coming back, like, where's that snake ass motherfucker Ty? And like Ty wakes up the next morning to find that his chicken's head just impaled on the spike above the camp. Yeah. Anyway, lots of fun ways I could play out. Unless you have anything else, we can move on to move back to the basin.
All right, let's go back to it.
All right. So next up we have Debbie, the one and only.
Oh boy, Debbie Wanner. I've heard it both ways. Debbie, incidentally, Debbie Donato Wanner. I don't know how many Big Brother people there are out there. Donato, a very famous last name in the Big Brother universe. So some potential interesting parallel stories going on here.
I'm surprised she hasn't been christened Evil Debbie yet. It seems like she would like that moniker. But where could we even start on Debbie?
Do you think there is any chance that Debbie is going to, like, surprise us this season? Or are we going to get more of the same Debbie we saw in Kill Wrong? And let me clarify, I'm all about getting more of the Debbie we saw in Kill Wrong. That's totally fine with me if that's what we get.
Debbie is guaranteed to surprise you in some way, because that's the appeal of Debbie, right? The question is she going to be surprising in the way that she surprises you? And I don't think she is. I think she's going to make some moves that don't seem to make any sense, and give some confessionals that don't really seem to make much sense either, and just generally do Debbie things. But I don't know if we're going to see a big new twist on the Debbie character that's really going to shock us.
Well, I think the big point of interest seems to be that dynamic with Aubrey, where she said, she seemed to put it pretty bluntly in her Meet Debbie like pre-game CBS video, where she said, Aubrey and I are not going to be best friends. It's going to be a race to see who takes each other out first. And I think that is going to be a really interesting dynamic. Now, it's certainly possible that they never end up on the same tribe. I think Debbie in particular could be someone who in some timelines is gone early. I know it has apparently been confirmed by Jeff Probst that we are going to be swapping after the first two rounds, like once the first two votes happen. So really any combination is on the table within the very early episodes. So I think that is definitely going to be the place that most people are going to be looking when things come to Debbie.
Yeah, if your name isn't Sandra or Tony and you're out in those first two boots, you probably messed up bad somewhere. I'm going to put it out there. So, yeah, I imagine Debbie and Aubrey very well could be on the same tribe at some point. And I don't think we're going to see the kind of Spencer and Cass detente that we had temporarily, where like Cass was able to put that aside and work with Spencer and vice versa. I think if they're on the same tribe, Debbie will not rest until Aubrey's out of the game.
That's what it said. What did Aubrey say about Debbie? Was she equally...
Aubrey was perfectly, as you would expect from her, she was a lot more calm and measured about it. It's like, well, yeah, there's probably some lingering distrust there, but I'm willing to put that aside and work with Debbie, you know, very gamely and upbeat. And then Debbie was like, I want her dead. I want her gone. So, yeah, a very one-sided feud, it sounds like.
Do you think they're going to do the same running gag where they keep switching her occupation every time she gives a confessional?
I hope so. I hope we get the Philip Shepherd question mark as well coming back. that's always a fun time. But yeah, Debbie, based on her pregame interview, she hasn't had any more occupations since the last time we saw her, which for someone of her talents and caliber is very disappointing.
Yeah, she says that she is drawn to working with Tony and Brad Culpepper, so that could be a lot of excitement there. And we also saw that Malcolm said Debbie might be someone that he had on his radar as a possible ally. I could definitely see a lot of timelines where Debbie gets in on like the majority alliance just because she's not viewed as a big physical or strategic or totally like social threat. And I really feel like this could be another really big breakout season for Debbie if things break certain ways.
Yeah, anyone who is willing to work with Tony at this point that's music to my ears. I will take whatever I can get. Hopefully there is more than one other person who's willing to do that, but you know, it's baby steps. We can get there. Other than that, I'm excited to see Debbie back. And I'm not sure if I'm more or less excited having read some of her interviews, because those caused a lot of controversy. She was firing a lot of shots at people, which I found quite entertaining, but lots of people were offended by, and their being offended by it made it even more entertaining. So if this is a constant theme throughout the season of Debbie just making everyone furious at her, then that could be fun to watch for some of us at least.
Right. I remember Twitter the day that Dalton posted her pregame vote, where she voted, she said, like, Andrea, this isn't Playboy, this is Survivor, or something along those lines. Something, like, genuinely pretty hurtful, like, not called for, as far as I can tell. That definitely caused a shitstorm on Twitter, to say the least.
Yeah, even though Debbie has done more modeling work than Andrea has, the only Playboy alumnus on the entire cast is Ozzy, who she wants to work with. And the other person she wants to work with is Troy Zan, who, if there were a Playboy shoot, he would be the guy behind the camera leering at all of the talent. So not Ozzy's really being too consistent there. But there was this other quote, too, that ruffled a few feathers. So I'll read it in its entirety. So and this is worthy of a dramatic reading, but it's too long to really be conducive to that. So, quote, I do want a woman to win, and that woman is me. It's absolutely out the window this time. I've known this for many years. I'm a chemist. I'm a captain in the Air Force Auxiliary. I'm around men. I have three brothers. I don't know what it is that makes women think they have to rip apart other women. It's just this popularity and beauty contest, or who's got the smallest ass and who's got the biggest tits. I lose out all the way around. So I do want a woman to win, and that woman is me. I'm latching onto the guys to get there. So to the extent that you can take Debbie to task for being inconsistent, because she's just, it's very like Trump-esque stream of consciousness, right? It's just saying whatever's on your mind at any given time. There's no need for it to match whatever she said 5 minutes ago or 5 minutes in the future. But it's, firstly, I think some of this is coming from a place of resentment that she was part of the most successful women's alliance in recent Survivor memory, and she was kicked out from that and blindsided. So I imagine that's still sticking in her craw. But then also, like, this is a theme which keeps coming up, where you have some of the female contestants who say, oh, well, I'm not like the other women out here, and I'm going to work with the guys. I've always been one of the guys. I'm a tomboy, and other girls are just so catty. I find I'm never able to work with them. And then you place five of them on the same season. Sure enough, they can't work together because they've all pre-committed to saying that they can't. And then they all leave thinking, oh, well, I was right all along. You know, women can never work together. Like, that's not borne out by the history on the show, right? Like, just pay attention and don't come into it with those preconceived notions, and there's no reason for that to be true.
It's actually like the opposite of Big Brother, where it seems like for the recent seasons they put on six different women who say, I definitely want to go in there and work with other women, and then it becomes like the biggest threat within the house right away, and they keep getting picked off right away. It's like it's having the opposite of the intended effect on both shows.
And then you have people like Nicole or Maddie who seem to be intent on being the last woman in the house at all costs, even though it's going to tank their own games. Or
Hannah
almost did for Nicole. Yeah, well, Hannah at least gave some kind of strategic rationale for it. But yeah, it's something which you do hear increasingly often. And like when Debbie says, I don't know what it is that makes women think they have to rip apart other women. Look in the mirror, Debbie. I mean, come on. Like, you're criticizing Andrea for apparently thinking she's on a Playboy shoot and she's like firing shots at other people too. Like, It's like a self-perpetuating thing. If you don't want that to happen, then don't do it. Like, it's not difficult.
Well, the thing that we definitely did not flag up nearly enough in our preview of the Mana Tribe that is definitely going to be weighing on my mind, because I spent a lot of time thinking about it, is entering every single All-Star season to date. If we had been doing season previews, and I guess we did do one season preview for Cambodia, but if we had been previewing the cast of season 8 All-Stars and Heroes versus Villains and Cambodia, none of Amber or Sandra or Jeremy were anywhere near the top of basically anybody's winner boards. And I have to feel like we've got to be overlooking certain people in this cast that are definitely going to go on to completely defy our expectations. Is it the craziest thing in the world? If Debbie is that is it the craziest thing in the world? Okay.
Like, at least all of them. So Amber was so like bland and inoffensive that you couldn't really say anything bad about her either. And Sandra, you know, there's, we're not going to rehash the whole Sandra thing again, but Sandra had already shown that she could win once, even though you might question how she got there. And then Jeremy, again, despite what I was saying about Jeremy, like, okay, he recognized his mistakes. He turned those around and credit to him. He did very, very well indeed. Debbie is not a normal Survivor contestant, right? Like, she doesn't think in terms of what should my strategy be or what mistakes did I make the first time around. Like, no, she's just like, I don't know how to capture what's going through Debbie's head.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't think even she does. So, yeah, I mean, that would be kind of the perfect ending to the season, right? If Debbie was somehow able to win, and I would be on board probably, but no.
Okay. It's not happening. Yeah, well, let's quickly, I think, if Debbie is off the board for you, let's, not to step on it for anyone else that we'll talk about later for this tribe, but let's roll just back through the Mana tribe, the people that I think would qualify as, if they were to go on to win, they would join that kind of where did this come from club, where I don't think Aubrey would qualify. Would Sierra Easton qualify for you? I feel like she is too notable of a player to qualify for the Amber Burkitch, Sandra, Jeremy Collins, like, how the hell did this person win kind of camp.
Yeah, I would be surprised on some level that she had finally done it, but it wouldn't come out of left field, right? Like, she clearly has some amount of talent, and it's just a question of how is this going to be the time that goes well for her. Someone like Haley, okay, yes, it would be surprising, but at this point, it would not be surprising, right? Because that's a classical mold of the All-Stars winner. I guess, like, Caleb would surprise me. Troyzan would, I would just quit podcasting altogether if Troyzan somehow won. And then, like, Varna winning, like, would surprise me just because he's, like, he just hasn't made it that far in the game before. But Debbie is just in her own league, as always.
Okay, yeah, I think Caleb would probably be the one that, like, if he were to go on, I think he would be the one. Actually, Caleb, I think, is going pretty high, tends to be going pretty highly in drafts. I may be wrong about that, but at least the things that I've seen, it looks like a lot of people are believing that Caleb is going to be viewed as kind of that, like, loyal team player who is going to be in there potentially in a lot of timelines in near the end with a chance. I just really can't shake the feeling that one of these 20 people is going to totally sneak up on us.
Unsurprisingly, most of the feedback about Debbie in, like, the Josh Wigler interviews and so on is she is batshit insane. I don't know what's going on over there. The one person who deviates from that a bit is Malcolm, who I think he wants to recreate the thing that he had with Denise. I think he's going to find very quickly that Debbie and Denise are not the same person whatsoever. But that could be a fun pairing to watch him try and, like, and do that again.
Do you know what Goofus and Gallant are? Like, the children's cartoon about the one person, the one kid who does it the right way and kid who does it the wrong way. I think that's Denise and Debbie are the Goofus and Gallant of Malcolm allies.
Then again, so looking at some of the quotes here, Sandra says, I like Debbie. She got a bad rap last time. Zeke says, I love Debbie. I think Debbie and I can get along great. Sarah says, I love Debbie. She reminds me of Trish. I think Debbie is going to become my second most favorite person. Michaela says she likes Debbie. Malcolm says she likes Debbie. JT says, Debbie, I can work with. Here's the money quote. Debbie, I can work with. She makes smart decisions. She's aware, very aware of her surroundings and what people are up to. For me, I like keeping around the good players. Team up with them so they don't team up and come after me. You know, Steven, I knew he was the biggest threat in Token Chains. We got together and we took it to the end. So again, Steven and Debbie, the comparisons are seamless. You know, there's really no difference there. And then Josh asked him, do you see the coach comparisons? And if so, do you like that? And JT replies, I do see it and I do like it. She's eccentric or what have you, but she's smarter than Coach Roderick. Shots fired at Coach, first of all. And then she's a smarter game player than Coach was. As the game went on, she got better and better. She had a shaky time right before she left, but her decisions were on point.
Let me go back to the question of, have crazier things happened than Debbie turning into a great player? I feel like we have said Coach Wade played a tremendous game in South Pacific after he got some experience under his belt. Go back to the first time that we saw Coach in Token Chains. I don't know how many people saw that coming.
Well, I think Steven did. Like, Steven was saying after Token Chains and his, like, sucks AMA or whatever, that Coach was actually an underrated player, which makes sense given that no one was rating Coach highly at all. But he was saying, like, Coach was able to kind of instill this ethic into the game of, like, loyalty and integrity and the way of the warrior or whatever, that actually ended up defining how the strategy of the season played out. And it was to JT's advantage, ultimately. But I think Coach was able to do that in a way which I don't think Debbie is. I don't see Debbie being, like, this unifying force behind an alliance the way that Coach was able to in his third season, where, by the way, he was playing with a cast of all newbies, and some of them, like Sophie and Albert and so on, were very capable newbies, but, like, that Debbie, even if she wanted to, couldn't fill the same kind of role here.
Okay. I am with that. I'm not going to put myself out there to the extent that I'm going to be calling Debbie as my, like, sneaky new Kelly Wentworth player of the season anytime soon.
I was hoping you would.
Yeah. All right.
So can we go back to the basin?
Let's do it.
Okay. Next up, we have, Sarah Lucina.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Sarah Lucina, one half of Cops R Us. She is back out here. She is someone who I know I brought up as we just like quickly talked through the cast, like whenever it was, like at the end of season 33 or whatever. Oh no, it was like during our auction draft. I think I brought up Sarah Lucina as I love this casting choice because I love when they bring back people who have major axes to grind. I also feel like it could be the case that Sarah has some very substantial Tony PTSD and could be quite exciting to watch kind of run around frantically on the island all for however long she can stay there.
Yeah, Sarah seems to be the consensus dark horse pick that, like the Monica from Cambodia, right, where everyone agrees that no one agrees that she's the dark horse. I kind of see it, but at the same time, I just don't really see what they saw in Sarah, or really what the other, like the producers and the other players in her first season saw in her either. Because you know, we saw the big dramatic meltdown where she was the president, and then suddenly she wasn't the president, she got impeached. But before that, I wasn't seeing what it was that made people so enthusiastic about her.
Well, I think on paper, she definitely seems like someone who should have a great chance in Survivor. Like, I really feel like if we were to draw up like the model Survivor player, it would be a woman right around her age who is right around as good in the challenges as she is. I think she definitely has room for improvement socially. But the big thing for me is just how much she's going to be able to learn from the mistake, that critical mistake her first time around of overconfidence, because I feel like if she is not able to take away some very valuable lessons from that, her upside is extremely limited on any season of Survivor.
Yeah, the pregame feedback is that the based on all of the body language and so on at Ponderosa is that she's really sketching people out. Like Malcolm was saying, quote, "Poor Sarah, I don't think her head's in it. It's intimidation, maybe? I hope it's not that. The wheels are spinning too fast. Something's going on. Her eyes won't stop doing this." There's implied motion there somewhere. And she sits too tense. And then Michaela says, "She's walking around looking like a female boxer. She looks like a punching bag to me. She's bulky and just stares intently at nothing all the time. It would be helpful for you to smile. Know what I'm saying?" JT says, "Sarah's a wild card. I get 0 vibe from her at all at Ponderosa. She's giving off nothing. She has this fierce gaze into the wall. You don't know what she's going to do." Andrea says, "She's really the biggest wildcard for me. I can't tell if she hates me. I think she actually hates me. We can't talk to anybody right now. She has these wide eyes. She's a little shifty." And it continues in the same theme. Yeah.
Right, this sounds about like the opposite of the Kim Spradlin effect of like she doesn't even have to open her mouth and she's got you hypnotized. It seems like Sarah, just by staring at people, is already putting people off. And that definitely, I think, especially on a season where people are going to be probably pretty paranoid pretty early on, I actually feel like Sarah could be someone we end up seeing leave pretty quickly.
Yeah, it would not shock me at all if she left pretty early pre-merge with not much fanfare, and all of those people who were saying that she was a dark horse pick were come around and say, "Oh, well, clearly she just had it coming the whole time." But I really didn't have too much more to add. I think Sarah is someone who I think like 10 minutes into the first episode, we're going to have either a much better or a much lower opinion of her.
Right, that's what I was going to say, I guess, is, well, I guess I would probably lean more towards, just based on all that pregame stuff that you just read through, that like, how could I possibly think that this is going to go swimmingly for her just hearing that? But I definitely think it is possible that she could be the person that we just saw a rough side of because of how things went for her the first time around. And it turns out Sarah actually could play some really strong Survivor potentially.
Well, so like you ask Spencer, for instance, and he's going to say, yeah, Sarah had a lot of potential and it makes sense if she was taken out, you know, as a threat potentially and so on. When I watched that season for the first time, and I know we were saying this as it was airing, she was very clearly being built up as someone to watch, right? Like she got all of these confessionals early on. I think coming out of the first episode, she was the top winner pick on Edric and so on. And it really felt like she was the big person to watch. And then that just kind of disintegrated over the course of the next few episodes. And I could see, again, if a first episode is good here and people start getting hyped up again, this might just be the build up to another legendary mistake.
It's definitely possible. I don't know. I think, again, like Andrea, I could definitely see Sarah going many, many different ways here.
I also get the vibe that she might not be good at justifying herself to a jury. She seems to be fairly reserved. She seems to have that that same quality that Maggie Elsborn had from Big Brother, where it's like she doesn't give anything away. She waits for you to make the first move or to make the first mistake, and then she kind of pounces on that. But she doesn't open up to you in the way that I think you need to in order to like really form those connections.
Yeah, and as James Ryan let us know, Maggie Elsborn also a cop, so that definitely makes a lot of sense there.
Right. In the words of the immortal Sandra Diaz Twine, quote, she has to go home. She's dangerous. She's the popo. She's the fuzz. 5-0. But you really can't put it any better than that, I don't think.
Well, I mean, if Sandra's coming after you, you know you're just done. No one that Sandra has wanted out of the game has ever made it to day 38 or day 39. So, all right. Good stuff. I think I'm good on Sarah. I think that's going to be definitely one of the ones that I have my eye out on big time as far as the premiere being a big indicator one way or the other.
Yeah, just looking at the rest of the people on her group, is there anyone who you think stands out as a good ally or potential enemy or what?
I could see JT being someone that she could be, just obviously everyone is going to be naturally drawn toward JT, I would imagine. But I think that he could see a lot of value in her as an ally, like a genuine person that he wants to be tight with. Is that a crazy pick in your mind? I know she's not from, where is Sarah from?
She's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, home of the great Denise Stapley.
Okay, that's right. I knew she wasn't Southern, which I know JT is not one to shy away from the kind of oddball pairings. I think this is definitely in play for me. Is anyone jumping out at you? I guess Sierra Dawn Thomas, actually. I could also see getting along well with Sarah as just kind of little, like strong women.
Well, funnily enough, Sierra says, quote, Sarah's hysterical. I've met her before. She's somebody I want to work with and keep around for a long time. I feel like she would be loyal. And like I gave the quotes about people being sketched out by her. There are also a few. Like Sierra's very positive. Aubrey seems to like Sarah a lot. JT seems open to the idea, I suppose. And of course, Debbie has to chime in too. So she says, quote, I love Sarah. We are very similar. She's in better physical shape than me. She lifts more weights. But we're both fit. We're both strong. We're both analytical. But we're both disciplined. I like Sarah a lot. She's also been fucked over by Tony. Meanwhile, I've been fucked over by Aubrey. We have reasons to sit together. Which I guess you have to bond over something. There's worse things. But yeah, so it could work out well for her. I just don't see it converting into a win. Like she could make a deep run as part of like a majority alliance or something. But my hot take, I suppose, and I guess it is a hot take, is that I don't buy the hype just yet.
Okay. I am sticking with... I don't think anything would surprise me with Sarah going out at any point in the game. Like, I really don't know yet. All right.
Yeah.
Which is why I get paid the big bucks to be the Survivor podcaster. All right. So, Dom, I think let's go back into the basin.
Okay, so we're going to be spending a lot of time on Ceree Fields, I imagine.
Okay, yeah, Ceree, our first four-timer that we're going to be talking about here. Let's start with that. Ceree joining Rupert and Boston Rob in the four-timers club. I am definitely, of course, cool with this. I am all about having Ceree Fields back on Survivor.
If you're going to have anyone back for a fourth time, I think Ceree is maybe the perfect person above all others.
I think that's not a bad take by any stretch. I certainly can't think of another three-timer. Yeah, that I would want to see back. No, definitely not. I am all about Ceree here, but the big question is how she's going to be able to manage having, you know, that she's a Survivor Hall of Famer, having such a big reputation. She's gone deep with great chances of winning twice already. Even in her third time, she seemed to take virtual control of that Heroes Alliance, and it totally became, it was only because, I suppose, of Tom having an idol and JT making a very forward-thinking move that even got disrupted for her. Otherwise, she would probably be in that three merges club already.
So the really interesting question for me is, for someone whose last season was as long ago as it was, so we're going on 7 years now at least, I wonder what Ceree thinks her own mistakes were in that season, what she's learned from that. In the RHAP breakdown for Ceree with Liana, which again, I definitely recommend checking out, this came up a fair bit, because with some of these people, so... Like Andrea, first time she played, like 21, 22, now in her late 20s. That's a big difference there in terms of life experience, the way you see the world, and so on. Ceree, as one of the older cast members, even though her last season was over 7 years ago, I don't know if she's fundamentally a different player or a different person now than she was back then. And maybe, you know, is she just going to, like, settle the score with JT? Is she going to be able to kind of come in with a blank slate and just take it how she sees it? Like, I don't really know what to expect from her this season.
I would hope that Ceri takes away from her less successful outing in Heroes versus Villains the same kind of way that I just drew it up of she was in there controlling that Heroes alliance, and it was only because of a really freak circumstance that that got turned upside down on her. I would definitely be saying, Ceri, keep doing whatever it was you were doing the first two times. Ceri, I don't think this is going to come as a shocking take, and it's something we've said many, many times over the five-plus year history of this podcast. Ceri is one of the best Survivor players of all time. I would recommend that you change virtually nothing. I don't think her game is one that needs very much tweaking at all. I think this is hopefully going to be a cast that she can once again find her way into the majority alliance and being the quiet manipulator behind the scenes. And there are so few people, I mean, probably people count on one hand the number of people that I have more faith to pull something like that off than Ceri.
So the big problem with that is the people that she had control over in Heroes vs. Villains, and I agree that she did, but it was Amanda and James, who she knew from Micronesia, and were fairly pliable anyway. And then you had Candace, who, again, didn't really have any other friends on that tribe and really connected well with Ceri. And then Rupert, who anybody could really manipulate. So she had these people there who she could bend to her will. On this tribe, I guess you have Ty, Sierra, maybe. But beyond that, I'm not seeing who's out there. Like, so Andrew and Zeke both say that they idolize Ceri. They would love the idea of playing with her. But that's because they recognize just how good she is, and they know that when she's casting her spell on them, that they need to maintain a certain level of distance. And even beyond that, like, she has this problem that everyone has identified so far of Culpepper, JT, and Ozzy probably not fitting into Ceri's value system and vice versa. Now, Culpepper has come out and said he's looking for that unlikely ally. He wants to work with maybe some of the older women, or he's not just going to bro down the way that people expected him to coming out of his first season. But for JT and Ozzy, like, even if there weren't these lingering grudges there, which I guarantee there are just laying below the surface, like, are they really going to want to keep Ceri around knowing what she can do? Like, there's a reason that JT put himself out there and flipped the first time around, and those reasons are still in place based on what you're saying.
Right, and I think that is the big issue is, while there are so few people that I would ever have more faith in to play a fantastic game of Survivor than Ceri, she is out there on a team with both JT and Ozzy. And we saw recently via Dalton Ross, of course, posting such great stuff every day from behind the scenes of the pregame on Instagram, where Ozzy held up his vote for who he wanted to vote out pregame, and it said Ceri. And I don't even remember what the reason is now, but it was something like, I'm not forgiving and forgetting you. Like, this is, it's revenge time, basically.
Yeah, and I think that sounded like a joke that you make, which really isn't a joke. Like, you actually do mean it, and people are trying to make it seem more lighthearted than it is. I think Ceri's card is marked, and I know coming into the season there are going to be some heartbreaking early casualties, and I'm steeling myself already for Ceri being one of those. And maybe what she has to do is hope that her tribe wins the first two challenges, makes it to the swap, and then things just happen to break perfectly for her. But I honestly could see her not making it that far. If the other people on this tribe are smart and they lose a challenge, they could very easily boot Ceri. And maybe it's good having Zeke there, who's like this unknown quantity, or you have some other threatening people on the tribe too. But this seems like, if you had to draw it up to be specifically bad for Ceri, it would look something like this.
Yeah, I guess it's really going to come down to how that dynamic, you know, as we've been talking about, the theme that we'll keep going back to for this tribe is how Ceri fits in with that Culpepper, JT, and Ozzy kind of challenge-happy trio. I definitely think even if she does manage to get like a footing in here, we know we're going to swap two rounds later. I do not think the six-person tribe is what suits Ceri's game very well. I think she's going to need to probably swap onto a team that is winning a lot of those immunities.
Right, and to make it past that first vote, Ceri might have to pull a trick out of her boat from her very first season, the very first vote there, just find a scapegoat to pile the votes towards. I'm not saying who that scapegoat is. I think she is the scapegoat. If, like, on the first night on Nuku Beach, if they're trying to find someone who is clearly a threat, is not good in the challenges, and who everybody on some level would prefer to see out of the game, then I could see like everyone being against Ri just from the get-go.
Yeah. I don't know. I am wholly unwilling to be ruling Ri Fields out ever before the season has started, especially when there are, yes, there are great players in here and there are some weaker players in here, but I think that like suits her well. Like, I think she is capable of bridging the gap between virtually any kind of player, herself and any kind of player, and making the best of whatever situation she finds herself in. So I am definitely still putting the blinders on to the possibility of Ri leaving early again. I'm not willing to allow myself to even think that way yet, Dom.
And one thing that would make it even more heartbreaking is not getting to see this feud between Sandra and Ri come to its natural conclusion, because Sandra, based on like one comment that Ri made in a podcast 3 years ago, just has it out for Ri, which, as you said, maybe it's a good sign for Ri. We don't know. But I would at least like to see the two of them butt heads and really get to see which of them are most, because that is a clash of the titans. Whatever you think about Sandra, like that is a heavyweight bout, and I want to see that at least in some capacity.
Yeah. Ri, I know, I'm pretty sure when we did that auction draft back at the very beginning of June, before I saw how much Jeff Probst seemed to want to get Michaela back on the camera during that season 33 finale, I believe Ri was my winner pick. I definitely would stand by Ri being extraordinarily high on my board, even recognizing the many, many ways that this could go poorly for her early on. All right, Dom, what more do we want to be saying about Ri? What any other pertinent things that others are saying about Ri, or anything that we should be on the lookout as far as Ri teaming up with a certain person?
Yeah, I'm taking a look at the other tribe now to see if she does manage to survive those early votes, who could bail her out maybe, or be a good ally for her. Malcolm and Ri is a really interesting partnership potentially.
That's exactly, yeah, I was about to say, I think Malcolm, if he's looking for his new Denise or just any strategic, I think he just as a smart person recognizes the value in having someone to bounce strategic ideas off of, the same way I think Ri and JT also have historically. I definitely think Malcolm is a prime candidate to see in Ri someone like a worthwhile ally that he knows he is never going to be like taking to the end, and he is not going to be under any kind of impression that she's going to be doing the same for him. Like, he is going to know that this is a temporary, we're both going to use each other as a buffer, and whatever happens, happens. I think that could be an incredible pairing for both of them.
Yeah, I think Aubrey could be a good partner too. I think definitely. Varna maybe is on the table. Haley, because Haley just doesn't seem to know who she is, so that could be, maybe she doesn't seem that threatening. Even Tony, like, so if Tony thinks, everyone has it out for me, I need to find someone else who also has this gigantic target and I guess team up with them, and it's going to be us against the world, then that could be a route to go down too. Because like, if Tony will not get to pick and choose who he wants to align with, I don't think. It's going to be whoever's willing to work with Tony on any given day. And if Ri is willing, because again, she's in the same position, then that could be a match made in not heaven, but somewhere.
Oh, I would say heaven, Dom. I would say Tony plus Ri
definitely. For me, yeah. I would love it. I don't know how effective it's going to be, but I'm going to love watching them try.
Oh, probably. I definitely. Yeah, I know what you mean as far as, yeah, I don't think that is going to be necessarily the most cohesive back and forth as far as give and take strategically.
Very different styles, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
back in the basin then.
Yeah, let's do it. I just want to close on Ri by saying all the best. I'm probably rooting, apart from Tony, for Ri. That may be even a stretch. There are so many people in this cast that I really want to see do well, but Ri, certainly one of my all-time favorites, as are many people in this cast. It's crazy. I know we talk about like the Troy Zans and Brad Culpeppers and Haley Fords and like how are they even justifying bringing these people back, but I also think it's going underreported just how top-heavy and strong the real icons that have made it back into this cast are, and Ri is definitely chiefly among them.
Yeah, I would absolutely co-sign all of that. Next up, we have someone who has been a lot more controversial than I expected them to be, and that's Zeke.
Zeke, yeah. I mean, we've referenced Zeke a little bit earlier when talking about Andrea, and I referenced again, and anyone who listened to our Mana cast preview will know that I have been wondering what's been up with Michaela getting all this attention during that season 33 finale and her edit on the show when Zeke was sitting right there and he got absolutely nothing. It does seem like Zeke might actually be the person that I would say I have had the generally coldest feeling from, as far as like the general Twitter vibes towards anyone. It seems like most people seem to be pretty low on Zeke, unexpectedly for me.
Yeah, and Reddit actively hates him, and they hate pretty much anyone at any provocation, but it seems to be especially strong towards Zeke. I guess maybe some people are just burnt out towards him after seeing him be this big character for a lot of the previous season. But yeah, I think I said when he was booted, like knowing he was coming back for 34, I thought we'd seen most of what we had to see from Zeke, but it might be fun to see him get another chance just to see if there is anything left unexplored. But a lot of people aren't even giving him that benefit of the doubt, it seems.
I think that's nuts to me. I think there's definitely plenty more we could absolutely see from Zeke. It surprised me, I suppose, that it was Zeke instead of David or Jay. I thought both definitely that production would have asked them to come back before they asked Zeke. But I personally, I might rather see Zeke back than either of those two. I think Zeke, I would probably go the other direction and say Zeke was someone we didn't see enough from in season 34. I know he was someone that they got a lot out of confessional wise, but game wise, I think there is a lot more that Zeke could definitely bring to the table.
Well, I think the argument is that, kind of like Russell in Samoa, his edit in his first season was kind of artificially constructed to prep us for his return in the very next season, and people kind of took offense at that. But like, so to me, that suggests that if that argument were to hold, that would imply that Zeke does well on this season, but I don't think he's going to. And so, like, working backwards from that, I think they just thought, okay, Zeke is like an interesting personality. He's clearly heavily involved in the game, which is pretty much what you want from a survival contestant, right? And so we're going to show him because of that, and then knowing that he's coming back for next season, that's an added bonus, and we can advertise that if we want to, but clearly we don't, because we want to give that to Michaela instead.
Right, that's the thing for me is, yeah, I definitely don't buy people who say, oh, Zeke's edit was totally manufactured just because he was going to end up coming back from 34. I definitely didn't see it that way at all. But when we look at the way that they seem to manipulate Michaela's edit, he did not get close to that kind of treatment, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so do you agree then? Are you expecting Zeke to be gone early, or do you think he can work his way out of that?
I think he definitely can work his way out of it. I am by no means...
Okay, but... Yeah, well, clearly he can get his way out of it, and we saw him have to navigate some of those tough situations the first time around. But do you agree with that basic view that it doesn't look good for Zeke coming into the season?
Yes, and it kind of comes down to a question that I had about just kind of that unknown factor for Zeke and Michaela in general. I think Michaela, you can understand more quickly why they would just bring her back in general, but Zeke, I'm really curious what his image is going to be for the other people, where he has the really bright patterned shirt and he has the peacock mustache. I'm really right. curious if that is helping or hurting. Like, on one hand, I could see the mustache being like a huge be him doing a huge disservice to himself and like drawing totally unnecessary attention. On the other hand, I could see him doing that, like, I could see that being a good thing, where people could talk themselves into the idea of, oh, he got brought back because he's this wacky character with the mustache and the Hawaiian shirt or whatever, versus, oh, he got brought back because he's of course got to be some great player.
Yeah, off the heels of Russell and Malcolm, if I get there on day one and I see this guy who I know nothing about, but I see him with all of the trappings of Zeke, the mustache, the shirt, and so on, I'm thinking, okay, this guy is up to something, right? Like he wasn't brought back because he was this like quiet underdog who everyone was rooting for. This guy wanted to be the villain or was heavily mixed up in something, and I don't know if I want to let him stick around to find out what that was.
Yeah, well, I do want to commend Zeke, because at least for me, I thought, maybe the most astute thing that I have seen anyone say all preseason was he said he noticed, just looking at the other group of people that were coming back, was a lot of these really strong guys who are back, they may have changed the game through means other than strategic play. Whereas he says the women are the people who historically have been the strategic powerhouse, and that is the path that he wants to seem to be taking. And I think that is a great observation and like a critical thing to consider when you have that opportunity to see who you're going to be playing against in a returnee season. I thought that was a really strong observation by Zeke, and I think if he does go out early, it is likely going to be just because of bad luck or the unknown, oh my god, we don't want to run the risk that this guy is the next Russell Hantz factor.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think that's an insight that Zeke is more naturally drawn towards anyway. But in this season, it's absolutely on point, I think. Like, you look at the cast. On the male side, you have JT and Malcolm and obviously Troyzan, clearly, and so on. But, yeah, you look down the female cast, it's a lot more even out at the top end. So you have, like, Aubrey, Sandra, Andrea. I think even throw Sarah in there, who I don't think will be a great strategist, but I think feels like she has something to prove. You also have Ceri, Sierra, not the other Sierra, but even she, I think, knows on some level that her coming back is unexpected, and she wants to make it feel like it was justified in retrospect. And then, like, Michaela clearly has unfinished business. I think only Haley sticks out as someone who won't really be playing the game in any kind of active sense. But she also is, in her interview, saying, I want to be out there making big moves and so on. And maybe that's just talk, but, like, all of them seem willing to mix it up in a way that some of the guys, again, they talk the talk, but I don't know if they're going to follow through on that.
Right, whereas, as you noted, when you compare that to the male side, you have basically Tony, Malcolm, and JT, and then crickets, for the most part.
Yeah, and that won't be for lack of trying on the part of, like, Zeke or Varna or some other people, but, yeah, I think that the strategy side is a lot more female-heavy, which I think is going to be an interesting dynamic to observe over the course of the season, and I'm sure, like, Sarah Channon will have a few blogs about it at some point, I'm sure, but, like, take note of that, because that's going to be... I think if your analysis doesn't know that in some way, it's going to be incomplete.
Right. As I was getting into how much I love that observation, I almost went into, like, a side rant about, like, how is he the only one saying this? Like, this is tremendously disheartening for some other people to not be pointing this out.
Yeah. I wonder if as the outsider, almost, he's in a better place to make those kind of observations, because he's able to take, like, this bird's eye view of everyone else in the cast. He's giving the same kind of analysis that we would want to give, or that, like, other people want to give, other fans who are watching the show or, like, learning about the cast, right? Like, he's in that position as opposed to someone who's out there giving pregame interviews at Ponderosa.
Yeah, yeah. So what are other people saying about Zeke specifically? I know they don't know anything about him other than Michaela, but what are their first impressions?
Yeah, so far it's all been very generic. It's like, well, they seem interesting, but I don't know. They're an unknown quantity. It's exactly what you expect, and it's all they can really say at that point. And that's the issue, right? Like, you just don't have anything to go on.
I'm really curious to see what the unknown quantity, like, how that plays into all of the politics among these people who know each other, the same way that, to reference our auction draft again, we did that auction draft, of course, not knowing anything about Zeke or Michaela, having not seen anything from season 33, or we didn't know who they were, we didn't know their names, we didn't know what they looked like, they were just season 33 male and season 33 female, and we had to set a price for what random unknown people were worth compared to all of these other known quantities, and I think that's basically what these players are going to have to do too.
Yeah, so looking at some of these quotes, Ozzy says that Zeke seems like a colorful individual. I think he's someone I'm really going to get along with, which is surprising to hear from Ozzy, actually. But maybe Ozzy has, like, chilled out a bit since last time around. JT says Zeke seems very reserved, like he's hiding something, so he's got to go. Ceri compares him to Ned Flanders, which is I thought was a pretty good call. Sarah compares him to Michael Snow, which is kind of out of left field, but I kind of see what she's going for. Debbie thinks that Zeke is going to be socially awkward, which is, if Debbie's thinking you're socially awkward, there's a problem probably. Haley seems a little bit unsure. Aubrey says that, like, Zeke seems to be a super fan of the show. So yeah, I think there's a general sense of unease surrounding the two of them. And I like we spoke about Andrea earlier. I imagine she might be wanting to cast off Zeke. I don't think Zeke's going to feel the same way. I think he comes in here knowing that his back might be up against the wall already, and he's going to gravitate toward the only person that he knows really in any capacity at all, and that's going to be Andrea.
That's such a weird thing that I hadn't considered when we were talking about it from the Andrea point of view, but he has someone there who can vouch for him and say, I know this guy in real life. Like, yes, he was on Survivor 33, but he's not an unknown quantity. I can tell you that Zeke is legit. Like, he's going to be a great ally for us. And Michaela doesn't have anything close to that.
So that could be his ticket out of the doghouse, right? Like, that could be his way in. So I imagine when Zeke was being thrown out there for his first season, I have to think Andrea knew about it at some point, right? Like, through the grapevine, you would hear that he was cast. I wonder if she knew he was being cast until she went through the process and saw him there at casting or like on the plane or whatever. Like that's got to be kind of weird where like you hear this guy's gone out there. Okay, great. Good luck. I hope he does well. And then you get called to go back on Survivor and you see him there. And that's got to be like a weird, like it's like a glitch in the Matrix almost.
I do not think it took until the two of them seeing each other at finals casting for them to know that they were both in contention for a returning season, I would imagine.
Sure, but the general vibe has to be weird, right? Like, you have this guy who you know in real life, somehow he ends up on Survivor, and then somehow he ends up on Survivor with you as a returning player. Like, that's, that's strange.
That's definitely a very, very weird thing. I mean, I don't think it's nearly to this extent, but, like, Adam told us, like, he and Mari figured out on, like, day one, they're like, oh my god, we were, like, 5 years apart at this exact same high school in Southern California. Like, obviously, it's a whole different scoop when they know each other and have potentially played Survivor Brooklyn together or whatever. I don't know even the extent of their relationship, but that definitely could be something very interesting to watch out for is if Andrea is just miraculously able to vouch for Zeke just through sheer happenstance of knowing him in real life.
And we would never know about it until post-game interviews, potentially, right? Like, if Zeke survives those first few votes, we're not going to know whether that's because he did a good job by himself of ingratiating with the tribe, or if it's because he was able to work that Andrea connection.
Yeah. Do you feel like there is a timeline where Zeke can establish himself as like a powerful player within the game, or are you just only seeing, it looks like it's, you know, for whatever reason, they're not going out of their way to build him up. So that probably means it's because there's not much to show.
Yeah. I think even if he survives those early days, then he will get cut down at some point, whether it's, after the swap, I think could be the perfect time, right? Like he gets swapped onto a new tribe. No one there knows who he is either, so they want him out first, and maybe he overplays his hand, or someone who's desperate just tries to get him out because he's the obvious easy target or something. Yeah, I don't see ending well for him, and to me the only question is how early is it going to be?
Okay, well, I think that's probably going to do it, at least for me on Zeke. I think we are good to reach back into the basin and find out where we are going next.
We are going to Aussie.
Aha, another four-timer now back with us, Ozzy here. What are the odds that we see anything new out of Ozzy, or are we just going to see essentially the same guy that we've seen the first three times?
I'm going to say exactly zero, but I'll leave a glimmer of hope in there. So again, looking at this age difference, so it's been like 6-7 years since South Pacific. Back then he was late 20s, I think, like 27, 28, and now he's 34. So that does not seem to me like he would have undergone any great personal transformation in that time. And based on these pre-show interviews, he does seem a lot more chilled out this time, maybe a little bit more mellow, and other people get that same vibe. But when he's out there under the pressure of Survivor, he's in his element again. He thinks that he's really good at this and he should have won certainly the first time and probably the third time as well. And I guess the second time, if he really wants to take it that far, like, I think that old sense of entitlement could easily creep back in.
Yeah, he says right away in his Meet Ozzy video on YouTube, he says, most people say I'm not here to make friends, I'm here to win Survivor, and I want to look at it the opposite way. I want to make friends, and hopefully that will win me Survivor. It seems to me like we are not going to see, maybe we'll see a more laid-back, friendlier version of Ozzy, but I am certainly not expecting to see any kind of like Coach or Tyson kind of transformation where suddenly he shows up and is a strategic powerhouse.
But is that fun? Because I didn't like Ozzy in South Pacific, but his whole like drama queen like story arc and everything, that was actually kind of interesting. But if he is now this like laid back, washed up surfer guy, then yeah, that whatever. Maybe he does well in the challenges again, and that's going to be fun to watch. He can try to break his record from last time, or maybe we get to see like JT versus Ozzy versus Malcolm in one of the strength challenges or something. I don't know, but I guess like, even for the Aussie fans, you get to see more of the same, but I don't think there's anything new to add on top of that.
Right, and I think, I mean, Ozzy's going to be someone because, and I'll put it out there, I think Ozzy is, if you had to pick the best Survivor Challenge competitor just based on what we have seen through 33 seasons, my pick would certainly be Ozzy, as far as like the most dominant and most capable person we've seen over the course of the most challenges. And a part of that is because he had the opportunity to win 10 straight challenges in a row or whatever on Redemption Island, and all of those individual challenges in Cook Islands and so forth that were so tailored to him during those kind of like early middle era challenges that were so much swimming and obstacle courses. But Ozzy would definitely get my vote as like the icon of Survivor Challenge competitors, and I think that's going to get him through the early game a huge piece of the time. What do you think are the odds that Ozzy now is able to set the record and make the merge for the fourth time?
I think it's pretty good. Yeah, it's going to be a social issue if it is one. It's going to be him not being in tune with the politics of whatever group he ends up in. But I could see, like, so the concern would be, let's say Ceri takes power and just goes after the alpha males again, which she has said she doesn't necessarily want to do. I think it's unlikely that Ceri gets that power. I think Ozzy even is more likely to have it than she is. And like maybe Culpepper and JT don't want someone that's as threatening around, but like I know JT, for instance, is probably going to want a shield. So Ozzy is literally the perfect person to have in that role, I think. He's a bigger target than you. You can beat him in the end and he's going to stay loyal. And there's nothing more you can really ask for. I guess, like, if there is, like, an alpha male wannabe who wants to take out the biggest threat, then that could be a problem. But if he doesn't mess it up for himself, he shouldn't have an issue. But it's certainly within his range to mess it up for himself, I will say that.
Well, we have seen Ozzy come one vote away from beating Yul Kwan in a jury vote. We have seen Ozzy come one challenge away from winning Survivor South Pacific. Do you think Ozzy has a chance to actually win this season? He's come right on the edge both times, twice before.
So he came one vote away in his first season under very strange circumstances, and he came one challenge away in his third season where it really felt like him losing or his tribe losing was almost a better thing for him, because I think if Savai had taken power, I don't know if Ozzy emerges from that in any kind of good position, really.
Right, I mean, his best path to victory might be running the table off on Redemption Island the whole time and not having to play the actual game Survivor.
And the closest comparison we have for this season is him getting blindsided with the idol in his pocket when he thought he was in control in a semi all-star season. So I don't know. I think in this kind of environment, he admits himself now, he hasn't always been good at the social or political part of the game in the past. And that is that much more important now in this season, because there are going to be people on this tribe who say, okay, great, Ozzy is the best of all time in challenges, but he's a threat to me or he doesn't fit into my plans and I want him gone. And the fact that he's good at the challenges is not going to overwhelm that.
Do you think that it's going to be yet another scenario where he is viewed as such a threat in the challenges that almost regardless of how things go down early post-merge, there's going to be no way he can avoid having his number called very quickly after losing his first post-merge challenge?
That would not shock me. It also wouldn't shock me if someone tries to throw a challenge pre-merge, like after a swap, to get him out before he can go on that run. Like if you can guarantee that Ozzy's going to be in a spot where you can vote him out, like he is eligible to receive votes, then that might be preferable to letting him make the merge and go on some amazing streak where like suddenly he's in the final six or something and just messing up all your plans.
Yeah, I mean, I know I talk about stringing together challenge wins being a very unreliable and outright generally bad plan towards winning Survivor. I think for Ozzy, that is easily his best plan, and I think he is very well suited for that kind of thing.
If anyone can do it, I you can say like Fabio did it or Mike did it, whatever. If someone can do it literally almost entirely through challenges, it's going to be him.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I think, I guess Mike did run out, that win five in a row or whatever. I think if anyone in Survivor history, as I said earlier, like I think Ozzy is the person you need to be most concerned about doing that.
Who do you see as the other challenge threats on the season then? Because for the guys, like JT, some people are saying he's getting old and fat. And then Malcolm like is good at the challenges, but not great. He's not on the Ozzy tier. So does he have any real competition?
The thing is, most challenges these days, once we hit the personal immunity phase, seem to end in a puzzle, which was definitely not always the case for Ozzy in the past, but he definitely showed that he is capable of doing puzzles. And I really have to go back to Malcolm is just so not clutching these challenges. I really don't see, I guess, I don't know how Caleb would be at puzzles. I'd probably be a little pessimistic about that, but
I can guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, Tony's not great at the puzzles. I really don't see anyone who can compete.
I would love it if he lost immunity at a crucial moment to Sandra or something like that. That would really be the perfect end to Ozzy's Survivor career.
What odds do you need to bet that Sandra will finally win her first individual challenge this season? That she makes it to the merge and then wins a challenge?
Wow. They would have to be pretty substantial.
10-15 to 1, I think, at least, would be what I would need to bet on Sandra winning an individual challenge.
And even that might be not enough.
Yeah, that might still be a total sucker bet. I don't know. Yeah.
So you have, like, Aubrey was fine in challenges. Andrea was actively good in challenges. Michaela is being marketed as being very good in challenges, despite not really having much time to prove that. So, again, another sign pointing to Michaela, maybe. But then you have these others who we know are not good in challenges. So, like, Sierra, Sandra. Sari was fine to a point. Like, Debbie was surprisingly good, but that's still not saying too much. I guess, like, Sierra Thomas is fine, but, like, she's not competing with Ozzy, right? Like, if it's – that's going to be more about the type of challenge that it is. Like, if it's balanced, then maybe Sierra's better. But anything else, I think Ozzy is going to be the favorite almost always.
Yeah, well, what do we think about Ozzy's spot within this tribe? Because we keep going back to Ozzy, JT, and Culpepper potentially being this three-headed challenge monster that could, if they can pull in a couple of other people, be the ones dictating – who leaves if this tribe does see a tribal council.
So I think Andrea's going to want to work with Ozzy. Debbie seems to be in love with him already. I think Sarah and Ozzy could connect pretty well. I hope that JT sees Ozzy for what he is, which is literally the perfect shield, and snaps him out pretty quick. Culpepper might be wanting to work with him, but maybe not. And I think Sierra will want to be on board with him too. So I think Ozzy socially has the tools to work with. It's a question of whether he actually follows through. And it sounds weird to say I have faith in Ozzy, but I think he will.
Yeah, I am definitely not going to be betting against Ozzy making the merge anytime soon. I think Ozzy has that skill set.
Also, I would say Ty and Ozzy, I imagine, are going to be on the same wavelength.
Why do you say that? Do you
just in terms of, like, the survival aspect, just being laid back, I think Ozzy's going to really like Ty's personal story and background. Sure, Ty's not going to be beating the challenges, but that other facet of Ozzy's personality, I think, really lines up well with Ty.
Okay, interesting call. I don't know if I could see that not necessarily being the most cohesive relationship.
Yeah, I have less confidence in that than in some of my other hot takes, but I don't know. I can see it.
Okay. I don't know. I have a very hard time seeing Ozzy doing much beyond very early post-jury.
Yeah, I think Ozzy is, or should at least, always end up in exactly the same spot, right?
Like
Ozzy is, if you had to give the definition of a second juror or like a first juror, it would be Ozzy.
Right. The second juror because he won the first post-merge immunity just to put the target even bigger on his back.
Or like, clearly he found an idol, so we have to burn that, and of course he's going to play it, so then, yeah. But yeah, I think that's probably where he's going to end up again, just unless anything strange happens.
Okay, sure. So I guess that's good on Ozzy. Let's go back into the washing basin.
All sticking together now. We have fan favorite, game changer, Sierra Dawn Thomas.
Excitement.
So first of all, I want to say about that moniker. Firstly, I understand it's necessary to distinguish her from the other, more distinguished Sierra. But I share people's frustration with the fact that she is on the season. Like, she is the obvious person who doesn't deserve to be there, or it's unclear why she's there, to the extent that, like, it has become an in-joke, and that I think even she recognizes that it's kind of weird that she's even there. However, maybe we should hold off on just undermining her like that until we actually get some kind of conclusive verdict on this season.
Right, I mean, we have to, because of how little we saw of her, I would say, on Worlds Apart, I think the door has to be open on, we definitely could be seeing a whole different side, or at least certain extra things that we didn't get to see in Season 30 from Sierra Dawn Thomas here. Like, I think she could easily be the Amber Burkitch, the modern Amber Burkitch, of, like, she shows up with essentially no business, even by her own admission, being on the season, and ends up winning it.
And I'm not saying, oh, poor Sierra, she got to come back and play Survivor again, despite really not earning it in the same way. But I don't know. If I was Sierra and I knew that everyone was just making fun of the fact that I didn't deserve to be part of this amazing experience for a second time. Like, that has to do something to you, right? You can't, even the most thick-skinned person can't avoid that.
Well, it wasn't happening back when she was out there playing. It wasn't until, like, she wasn't hearing all the feedback. I I'm not sure it was going to be a surprise to her. I'm sure she was aware that that was going to be the response.
Okay, but let's say the season doesn't go well for Sierra, right? And she's on the flight home and thinking, well, okay, not only has this ended in disappointment for me, this amazing thing, which I know I'm never going to get to do again, and it's lucky I was even able to do once, let alone a second time, but I also know that when people learn I'm in the cast, their first response is going to be, why is she here? She doesn't deserve it. I want someone else instead. And I'm going to be hearing this constantly for the next however many months until the season starts airing. And then at the point where, I don't know, I get blindsided or something, everyone is going to say, see, I told you, you know, she was a waste of space. Like, why? Like, there's no, I'm trying to put myself in her shoes, and it's not feeling good.
I think the way to put yourself into her shoes is to imagine yourself as a person who barely cares about Survivor. Like, she did not watch the show before her season. She did not watch the show after her season. She was on Twitter for like 3 months. She is not concerned about what Survivor fans think at all, I would imagine.
Which is a wise approach to take in general, to be sure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe I'm kind of trying to like transplant my own mind into hers, but I don't know. So, like, if she does go out early and she doesn't add much to the season, then I will be the first to jump back on that bandwagon and join in with the jokes and the memes again. But for now, I'm just saying, turn it down just a little bit. Just a little bit.
That's what I'm saying, too. I feel like Sierra is definitely someone who, you know, if I'm not going to be picking Ozzy as my, like, lock to make the merge just because, hey, he's a returnee now and people know how sickening he is in the post-merge challenges, I might honestly say fan favorite game changer Sierra Dawn Thomas might be the front runner to be like the most likely person to be there at the merge.
Yeah, however, the thing that does give me pause is she says the one person that she's spoken to, the one person that she has this pregame thing going on with is Troyzan. And that if there is some like Troyzan Sierra alliance, that is the darkest timeline for sure. If that ends up defining the season, making it to the finals, which by the way, if there is a smart player like JT or Malcolm left in the game at that point and they say, okay, I could take Sierra and Troyzan to the finals of an All-Star season, lock it in. Like, that's going to happen if they have anything to say about it. And I guarantee you, Troyzan will think he did that all by himself. He swindled everyone into taking him to the end. He hoodwinked them perfectly, and he deserved to win. And it's just a bit of jury, which shockingly didn't award it to him when they inevitably don't.
Right. I mean, if you need any further evidence that she is not remotely in tune with the Survivor as a show in the Survivor community, all you need to see, as far as I'm concerned, is that, oh, Troyzan is my tight ride or die preseason.
Well, no, I in a way, he is the perfect ride or die to have, right? Like,
not when I'm looking at what do I want the person I'm investing in to be thinking preseason. Locking down Troyzan is not what I'm interested in.
If I want to win, right, and I'm Sierra, who probably is going to need some help in that department, I need someone who is actively unlikable, like Troyzan, there to drag along to the end, and then I can worry about the other person.
But I mean, I think being Boston Rob and wanting to drag your Philip Shepherd to the end from looking at day 39 on day one is a bad enough idea already. Looking at day 39 and who the goat you want to drag, despite them being potentially a massive liability in this what will presumably be extraordinarily hectic environment before the game has even started and you see whose tribe you're even on, is crazy to me. To me, hearing Troyzan is my close pregame ally is Troyzan was the one person who called me and I didn't know better to say no.
Look, you don't have to sell me that I'm not going to like it, okay? But I think it does make some kind of twisted sense.
Okay. Well, what are other people saying about Sierra Dawn Thomas if they even know who she is entering this season?
We don't know yet, and that's the real tragedy of all of this, that Josh, maybe wisely, maybe in some trolling effort, has left out Sierra until now. So we don't get to see 19 other people say, wait, what? Why? And I imagine that would be the general tone of the comments.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well, although I could definitely see people being pretty fine with, like, when they look around and they see Tony and Sandra and Brad Culpepper there looking at Sierra Dawn Thomas and going, oh, at least I don't have anything to worry about with that.
I imagine there will be at least two or three people who legitimately have no idea who she is, and so when they get asked about her, they'll clearly be like just winging it. They'll be like, well, I think she played quite hard on her season, you know, just like these very generic statements which clearly aren't based on anything.
I will take way the over on two or three people who do not know who Ciara Dawn Thomas is before they find out, before they like are told and research who she is.
Okay, let's go down the list then. So I think Haley, well, okay, Haley probably does know who Ciara is. I will put that out there. But for a better example, let's say Ty. Okay.
All right. We'll start with the Mana tribe. I will run through. I'm looking at the Mana tribe. Here is who I would guess did not know when they saw Ciara at finals casting who she was. Ciara Easton, I would guess, did not know who Ciara Dawn Thomas was. Michaela, I could see not knowing who Ciara Dawn Thomas was. Sandra, no way. Caleb, no. Or Sandra might.
Sandra, to her credit, she did her homework.
Even rewatching the recent seasons, I could see her not recognizing Ciara Dawn Thomas.
Yeah, and Caleb, no question, he does not know who she is.
Absolutely right? Not. Tony, no way, I would say. He watched the season but would not remember her.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. And then, okay, so maybe weigh the over on two or three. Right. And looking at Nuku.
Varner, by the way, no way, I would say, even having been on Second Chance. She was not on the Second Chance ballot, right? So I don't think he would know who Ciara Dawn Thomas is. And now looking at Nuku, Andrea, I will buy that she would remember Ciara Dawn Thomas just because she's involved. Suri, I highly doubt, would remember Ciara Dawn Thomas, even being a regular Survivor viewer. Debbie Wanner, no way. Sarah Lucina, virtually no way, I would imagine. Brad Culpepper, no way. JT, no way.
Okay, Ozzie, all right.
Ozzy, no way. Ty, no way. Zeke, absolutely. Zeke, I think, definitely is the only one who for sure knew who she was.
Do you think Ciara knows who she is?
I almost read her and said no way just out of force of habit. Like, I think we are more accurately, Dom, looking at two or three people who do know who she is.
In a way it's good, I suppose, but that is such a terrible position to be in coming into a season. First of all, I imagine there's basically no pre-gaming. Something that goes beyond Trizan, but who knows. But also, like, you're just not going to get the respect. Like, even if Ciara ends up playing a pretty solid game on paper, if you look at it, I don't think anyone's going to give her that kind of credit unless she actively puts herself out there and does something spectacular.
Well, you made this same point about Haley Ford, and I disagreed with it then, and I will disagree with it again, because I don't think they care when they're voting as jurors. They are not asking themselves, what did I think of this person entering this game? I didn't know who this person was entering this game. They are only looking at who screwed me over, who hurt my pride in these all-star seasons, who can I live with being the winner of this season? And I think Ciara Dawn Thomas could easily be the answer to that question.
Yeah, if it is an angry jury scenario, then maybe. But I think that reputation that you have coming in frames how everybody else sees you. So someone like Tony, let's say, even if Tony tries to play a very quiet game, there's no way that's possibly going to work. No one's going to believe that he doesn't have some kind of scheme under wraps that he's planning. And like on the other extreme, for Ciara, even if she could stick with her alliance, maybe be involved in a blind side at some point, or help someone else find an idol, there are lots of things that could happen. But I don't think that she's going to get the credit that maybe she would deserve proportionately for any of those things.
Yeah, I think you are right that she is going to be one of the people that they are less inclined, if the question becomes, who are we giving the credit to for this stellar game that this majority alliance who just voted us off, like who we want to reward for that. I just don't see that being the all-star mentality at all.
Well, so as an example, let's say you have an alliance that has Andrea and Ciara in it, and it's a pretty solid majority alliance. They're involved in a few blindsides of crucial players at important times. Someone finds an idol and plays it or something. Just, you know, standard operating procedure. I think if you're a juror, especially someone who is on the jury early, hasn't been like face-to-face with any of the finalists for maybe 2 weeks now, you're going to look at that and say, okay, it was probably Andrea who was involved in the real decision-making there and not Ciara, even if, in fact, and on paper, it was Ciara who maybe deserves the lion's share of the credit. And to overcome that, she would really have to argue her case very well not just at Final Tribal, but also in advance to prime the jury for that. And I don't think she, I don't think she can.
I just really do not subscribe to the philosophy that all-star juries are going to be approaching their votes from the perspective of who played the best game. I just, I don't see that at all when I look at any of the all-star seasons.
Well, okay, so look at the all-star seasons we've had. So all-stars, Boston Rob, again, that was more of a vote against Boston Rob, I think.
Right.
You know, Shean says it was for Amber, but she might be the only one. Then Micronesia, if you want to count that, I think Ceree being taken out changes the analysis there a bit. But again, like, I don't think there was any special enthusiasm for Parvati for most of the jurors, and Amanda just kind of blew it at Final Tribal again. And then Heroes versus Villains, you have the Russell factor, which really colors and poisons everything. And then Cambodia, I think people really wanted to vote for Jeremy, so they voted for Jeremy.
Right? They liked Jeremy, and they were mad at Spencer. Like, that's...
Okay, but what I'm saying is, we haven't seen a Sierra type go up against someone who is seen as an equal. And part of the reason for that is, because of the way she's viewed currently, there aren't really any obvious equals for her.
I would say if Sierra is in the finals with someone who is deemed the like more dominant leader of strategy within their alliance, give me Sierra over that person. I would gladly bet on Sierra being the winner over the person that is viewed as the strategic force behind the alliance.
Okay, well, I really hope we never have to bet on that.
I hope so, too. Yeah.
Right. Is there really anything else to say even about Sierra?
No, I'm good on Sierra. I think that this is another person for whom the premiere is going to heavily dictate my forecasting for Sierra.
Yeah, I can imagine like 5 minutes into the premiere, we've already had two amazing Sierra confessionals. I think, oh, fuck, it's going to happen, isn't it? Like, this is the timeline we live in.
If you get either of Haley or Sierra in the opening few confessionals before the theme song, lock it in. They're in the finale. They are deep in there every single time if they're getting highlighted right away.
Yeah. So I know we brought this up when we spoke about Haley, but the two of them seem to have some kind of feud lingering from their season. And like, it would be fitting, but also kind of depressing if this big like game changers all-star season comes down to some like tiff that's left over from a season between two players who no one really expected or wanted to be there from like 2 years ago.
I mean, that is the epitome of Survivor All-Star seasons.
Right. I mean, I would not be shocked, but again, I'm praying to whatever God I don't believe in that doesn't come to pass.
All right. Well, let's move it along. I think we only have two or three people. I'm only seeing two names here that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah. So, and we're going to be saving the best for last. We are moving on to Brad Culpepper.
Excellent. I'm glad that we will close with JT, but for now we will go into Brad Culpepper, who we saw famously get rejected by Jeff Probst on the Survivor Second Chance. The last we saw of him was him being told by Jeff Probst that for once in his life he was finally right about the fact that he was not going to be on the next season of Survivor. But here he is now, a couple seasons after that, Brad Culpepper deemed a game changer. What do you make of seeing Brad in this cast?
I'm actually not too surprised, because I think they wanted to bring him back. I think they really liked the whole Brad and Monica thing. I think they liked Brad in his own right. I think Jeff especially likes Brad a lot. And so they wanted to give him a chance on the ballot. I think they didn't fully expect him to make it, although maybe Jeff thought the audience sees Brad the same way that he and production does, like as this not heroic figure maybe, but as someone who embodies the values of the show and should be rooted for and so on. So when he didn't make it then, I think if they had a convenient excuse to pencil him in the future, they were going to do that, regardless of how well he might have fit the theme in question.
Yeah, I don't know if Brad Culpepper was put on that second chance ballot to be anything other than okay, so here's someone who will definitely not make it, and now the Jeremys and Spencers and Joey Amazings are only competing against 15 people instead of 16. I think there may have been a couple of guys on there that fit that description, and Troyzan may have been another one.
Yeah, I can see that too, and I believe that's actually what we both said at the time, so maybe I'm just going down the memory hole here and not remembering anything, but I don't know. I think there is some affection for Brad among the higher ups in casting, and so yeah, I guess I'm surprised on one level, but also not really at all.
No, I mean, it seemed to me like Monica Culpepper returning in the first place was nepotism, and it seemed like Brad getting back, you know, his return shot seems to be more of that. But I definitely get it. Like, Brad 100% brought it as a character for the four episodes, I suppose, he was in of Blood versus Water. I mean, he was the focal point.
Oh, this is like level three nepotism. This is the this is the inbred cousin of the Kennedy family running for president.
Right.
You know, you expect it to happen. You know it's going to happen. That doesn't make it any more palatable when it does.
Well, is Brad someone that you think could be this season's, oh my God, that guy is an actual Survivor player?
I will say I've been liking him a lot based on his interview so far. He seems to be a lot more humble. He seems to recognize his mistakes and come up with ways of addressing those. So he said, you know, he didn't consciously choose to just team up with all the guys in his first season, but he's going to actively work to avoid doing that this time around. He wants to work with maybe some unexpected people like Suri and so on, and he just wants to kind of take it back. Like he understands his own role in the game. He knows that he's not going to be charging in and running over people like Tony and JT and Malcolm. He needs to kind of ease into it, let everyone find their footing, and then just be part of a solid group. And I think if he can actually do that, then it's going to work pretty well for him.
Didn't Cerise say she wanted to work with Culpepper? She was like, I'd even work with Brad Culpepper if it came down to it. Like, I'd have to keep my eye on him, but I'm definitely open to it.
Yeah, I don't know if she's going to have a choice. That might be a marriage of convenience, but the fact that it's even on the table is a good sign, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it is a good draw for Culpepper to go back to it yet again, to be on the tribe with JT and Ozzy, where it seems like he's on a tribe with people who really care a lot about challenges, and he's going to be okay, at least in their eyes, I would imagine.
Yeah, I could easily see an alliance that's like Brad, JT, Ozzy, and then they pick up Andrea and Sierra. And that seems it seems so obvious to me that I'm starting to worry it might actually happen now.
And Zeke could easily tag along with Andrea to be the sixth and just take the majority, potentially at least, we're looking for a sixth.
Yeah, although I could see if they target Zeke early and Andrea thinks, well, I could join this obvious prefabricated alliance, or I could go out on a limb to save my one friend from outside the game, she might just have to boot Zeke in a very like Francesca-esque kind of way.
Yeah, that's directly what we referenced earlier when talking about how Andrea may have to turn on her best friend from New York if it looks like that's the way the rest of the tribe wants this to go. And I definitely think that is a timeline that's in play there. I'm as surprised as anyone to be saying this, but I'm actually liking Brad Culpepper's chances here early on. Like, I think he could easily be someone in there at the merge. I don't think he's going to be like the most respected player or like the leader of strategy that everyone is turning to. Oh, please, Brad Culpepper, just tell me what to do here. But I definitely could see him in there for quite a while as a real player of the game and not just sitting around.
So one question I have about Brad is he raised unprompted in one of the interviews the question of his wealth, because he is a fairly wealthy guy and he is perceived to be a very wealthy guy. So he was saying he thinks that's going to be a big obstacle if he does make it to the end. Do you agree with him on that? Or because that feels like something which is often raised as a specter for why someone can't win, but we don't really see it explicitly tested in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a hurdle to overcome if he is out there mentioning unprompted how wealthy he is to people. I think people, of course, are going to know that he played in the NFL and that he's now a lawyer. But I think if Brad made it to the final tribal council, I think he would at least get a fair shot. Like, I really don't believe that all-star juries are voting for who played the best game or who needs the money or things like that. Like, I don't think that factors into it for them.
It's not the Russell Hans approach of lying about how wealthy you are when, like, saying you own some great oil refinery when actually it's just like a shack in like a Texas field or something. It takes some real special alienation ability to lie about how wealthy you are with the intention of turning off other jurors. Like, that's pretty special.
Well, I really believe that the Russell lying to the players about how much money he had was because he wanted America to think that he was crazy, like Trump. He wanted America to think, I'm out here, I'm super rich, I don't need the money at all, I only care about winning.
Well, say that to the cameras then, not to the people who are going to be voting to give you $1 million if you make it there. But I bring this up because I know Stephen has said in the context of the Cambodia jury house that one way the argument was framed by some people was, like, Spencer is from a wealthy family and He's going to be going into like investment banking or something. He's going to be a very wealthy guy. Jeremy has a kid. He's got another kid on the way. Like, Jeremy needs the money more than Spencer. And that was explicitly argued by some people. Now, how much that actually weighed on their decision is unclear. Like, Jeremy wins 10 to nothing anyway. Probably would have happened regardless of how wealthy either of them were. But it's at least being raised. And the question is, how much does it actually matter?
I mean, can you point to any time other than the only instance I can think of where a juror has said the money is going to impact things for me is when David Wright on RHAP completely proved my point and proved Adam Klein wrong and said, I would never give Will Walla $1 million. I would never give any 18-year-old $1 million. I've never heard, at least that I can think of, anyone getting a jury vote, not just winning the game, but even getting a jury vote on the grounds of they need the money more.
Well, so I think back to, and okay, I have to think back to like Helen Glover to come up with an example, which maybe is a sign that you're right. But I know Helen was saying she was turned off from voting for Brian because of like in that video from home, she saw his amazing house, and Cece was talking about a trip to Fiji and so on, and like that kind of raised her hackles a bit.
I mean, Cece, like, she like goes to the garage and like, oh, here are all your Rolls Royces doing just fine. Yeah. Like, don't worry about that.
but then she still voted for Brian anyway. So maybe I'm just barking up the wrong tree and wasting everyone's time here.
I don't know. I think it's a fine point to make, like that could definitely play a role, but I think that might be like the most historically overblown thing as far as what people think about when considering like jury things. Like, I really don't feel like we've seen virtually any scenarios where who had whatever amount of money entering the game played a role at all.
Yeah, Dreams was not a millionaire at any point, right? Like, they did not give him the money just out of the kindness of their hearts.
Yeah, I mean, Dreams didn't get a single vote. Yeah, all right. So what are people saying about Brad Culpepper now, if anything? I'm sure this is going to be one of the more interesting pregame articles from Josh and everyone else, but I don't know if we have any of them yet.
Yeah, it will be interesting when we get to it. We don't really have anything at this point. The one thing that does come up sometimes is Brad being perceived as like this hard pre-gamer, which he brings up himself. He is still furious over the whole Casa Culpepper thing from before Cambodia, which is still way on his mind and maybe on some other people's too. But other than that, there's literally nothing out there about Brad as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Well, Brad was someone who in our season 34 auction draft, none of the two of us nor Koss thought that 50 cents was worth spending on Brad. So he went undrafted, and our prize pool for that auction draft is $108.50. If Brad Culpepper wins this season, we have decided to donate that to charity. And I think we didn't know which charity at the time. I think now let's go Stand Up to Cancer. If Brad Culpepper wins this season, $108.50 going to Stand Up to Cancer.
So if you weren't rooting for us to be wrong already, that's some added incentive to to cheer against us.
Right, exactly. Brad Culpepper, at least some good can come of it if Brad Culpepper wins. And I will put it out there. I think Brad Culpepper could be a person who we look back on as that guy and said, okay, he at least really surprised me and became a player. Like, I think that is in play.
Yeah, I think Brad is going to hopefully acquit himself well this season, and I don't think people will say, oh, I'm very glad they brought him back as a game changer, but they will have some kind of lasting appreciation for him as a Survivor contestant, maybe.
Yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. All right, so Dom, I think we are down to our last person, and I think let's dive into it. We are looking at JT Thomas, the ATM machine of Survivor players, I guess.
Yeah, this may have to be a part three all by itself, depending on how long this goes, because there is a lot to say about JT, or Juicy Thick, as some have taken to calling him. Now, let's get that out of the way, first of all, because I know some people were like just joking about his dad bod and reviving the whole Superman in a fat suit thing that people were saying about Colby. But first of all, who even cares, right? This isn't something which we should be devoting any of our attention to. Secondly, if you're going out there on Survivor and you are a fit, muscular person, you should be putting on mass, right? You should be bulking up so that your muscles aren't eating themselves from the inside on day 14 or whatever. And like, we've seen this happen to, like, I think you look at Tony's before and after picks from his first season. It is startling just what that did to his body. And you know, if you are not prepared for that, then you are in for a rough surprise.
The most startling, by the way, Russell Hantz. If you see him on day one of Samoa versus the end of Heroes versus Villains, he's like a shell of himself with a giant beard.
Right, and to be fair, that's basically two seasons back to back, right? But yeah, it does prove the point that, like, you need to be aware of what this is going to do to your body and have no shame about, like, putting on some pounds or whatever so that you're, like, insured against that. Secondly, or thirdly, whatever we're on now, he's 32, right? Like, he is still in perfectly good shape for a 32-year-old. And the people who are actually making fun of him for being fat, let's see some pictures for you when you're 32, okay? And we'll see. we'll put them up on the board and compare side by side. Thirdly, this is just like a normal body size, okay? There's nothing wrong with the way he looks. And there wouldn't be, even by whatever, like, very strict standards you want to uphold him to. So let's put that to bed. There's nothing to be said about that.
Oh my God. That's such a thorough defense of JT's body shaming. I love it. We've literally advocated many, many times for the years. We said, hey, Malcolm, Joey, amazing. Ozzy, when you come back for these future seasons, put on 20 pounds, like drink a bunch of beer. You will be you will come across as far less of a threat.
And people literally are saying that about JT, that, oh, he seems like he's not going to be in as good shape, or he won't be as good in the challenges. That is perfect, right?
Right.
JT should have a massive target on his back, as we'll get on to. It doesn't seem like he does, which is insane, first of all. But why come in there with, like, some, like, rippling six-pack when you can at least deflect that threat by doing what you should be doing anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dom, I am very interested in finding out who out there knows about JT and Token Sheens, and who I think plenty of them know the name JT and remember giving the idol to Russell in Heroes versus Villains. But by my count, I would say Zeke definitely knows about JT and Token Sheens. Aubrey definitely knows about JT and Token Sheens. Malcolm seems to. Michaela and Sandra and Andrea, I think, are maybes, but probably yeses. I don't know anyone else who knows how absolutely lethal JT can be.
And of the people who do remember him, some of that is, I have a vague memory of liking him on his season however many years ago, right? Like, it's not, oh, JT is this amazing Survivor player who needs to be taken down before he can work his magic. Is, oh, yeah, I liked him. He seemed like he was loyal. He was good in challenges. I liked Jalapau. It was a nice little band Like, they aren't in that mode yet of, this guy is lethal and you can't give him any kind of wiggle room.
Right. No, I totally agree. And I think that is, like, it is astounding to me that of the three winners who are entering this season, JT is on nobody's radar because he's there with Tony and Sandra. Like, you cannot draw that up any better.
Yeah, like, of those pregame votes, JT has received exactly one from Zeke, which seemed like it was in jest to begin with. Sandra and Tony have had, like, 10 between them. You have to actively look to find people who didn't vote for Sandra or Tony. Yeah, it's like people talk in general terms about, oh, I don't want the winners being here, and, oh, they won their season, so they must have done something right. But whenever they delve into specifics, it's always, oh, Sandra won twice, or Tony's so scary. None of them talk about JT in those kind of terms.
I mean, I think JT, if we want to talk about, like, that Sarah Lucina body language, or Tony walking around Ponderosa with a giant stick or whatever, people were talking about, people gave all these quotes about, like, JT just seems like he's a goofy guy. He's laughing around. Like, he seems like nothing's going on.
Yeah, Andrea, after saying that she loved JT, that she gave him a shout out in her audition video, in theory, she should have a good memory of what JT is like. She had this to say about his pregame stuff, quote, if someone's a winner, it's a really good reason to get someone out. But JT doesn't strike me as very strategic. He's walking around, he's smiling at everybody, and everyone sees him smiling at other people. Clearly very non-threatening. What could you say about that? Sarah says, I love JT. He's here in Ponderosa, listening to music and dancing like a fool. He doesn't give a fuck. Malcolm says, I love him. I grew up in the South. He grew up in the South. He's drinking Coke for breakfast. That's the most Southern thing I've ever seen in my life.
Where did Malcolm grow up?
He
went to Dartmouth. Where did he grow up in the South?
That's a good question. I wanted to say Georgia, but I think I was confusing him with Spencer.
He doesn't have any kind of accent, any kind of Southern accent. So that's interesting. All right, whatever.
He's a man of mystery. So Tony says, he's like Jeremiah Wood, a sweetheart. I think he'll go along for the ride, which let's not even get started on that. Ty says, JT's sweet. He's straightforward. He seems like he'll be fun to be around. Like, that's... And okay, there are some other quotes, and we'll get onto those in a second. But like, this is just absurd. Like, how can you be invited back to play Survivor again and not at least have some reservations about a guy who won once and made a massive strategic move, possibly a terrible blunder, but at least was capable of that kind of agency? How can you just write him off as some kind of lovable goofball?
Yeah, I mean, let's quickly touch on his heroes versus villains game, and because I think that reputation is probably going to be what most people remember. And we have always been very complimentary of his decision to turn on Ciri early on, and then it seemed like the four people he just blindsided very quickly forgave and forgot. And then, of course, there are going to be some bones to pick with giving Russell the idol, given how it ended up backfiring on him, and he essentially got idled out with his own idol. But we definitely felt like that move takes far more heat than it probably deserves. Like, he, if that can work out, is in a phenomenal spot to win the game again.
Yeah, I would question if those four people did forgive and forget, but at the time, before that move, they didn't see it coming, right? They thought JT was absolutely on board with them, that he was still trustworthy, still part of their group. So if you, like, you need to be getting out in front of him. You can't just let him pull off some amazing move and then try to work against him, because it might just be too late at that point, especially in a season like this. If it does devolve into voting blocks or whatever it is, like, you just can't have that kind of complacency.
Right. But how much does he need the strategic partner, though? Because it seemed like when he was making his own moves, I know a lot of it was he had, you know, less than a year ago just played a nearly, you know, a perfect statistical game of Survivor and was out there presumably only caring about winning again and not really giving a shit about lasting in as many episodes or just making it all the way to the end. I think he was explicitly playing only for first place, and I would guess that's going to be the case again here.
Yeah, and I think we might see that kind of Andrew effect where after your first season, in your second season, you kind of overcorrect or you make some big adjustment. And then for your third time round, a lot later, you kind of you have the thesis and the antithesis. And then this is the synthesis. You find the combination that works for you.
I just did the math as you laid it out explicitly for me, so I didn't even really do it myself, that thesis and antithesis were like the I've never made that connection before.
Well, I'm sure all of the Hegelians among the listener base will be chiding you for that. But so I think like the same arguments we made for that about Andrea also apply to JT, and specifically the age point too, because JT, the first time he played was 23, and he won Survivor at 23, which never ceases to make me feel bad about myself. And then I think at the time of Heroes vs. Villains, he was 25 or thereabouts, but he's 32 now, so that ideal age range that we identify, he has kind of already gone over the crest and is coming back down the other side. I don't think it's too late for him, though. I don't think he's going to be unable to connect with the younger people in the game, but I think he does seem like he's a kind of older, more mature, and therefore less threatening player because of that.
I think he has evolved like exactly as I would want him to. Like, he has become, he's married now. I believe Steven officiated his wedding. Yeah. And I almost brought this up when we were talking about Sarah Lucina, because I was wondering if her now becoming a mom would potentially, like, she would go out there with a slightly different mentality. But I think JT has definitely evolved a ton from his first couple of, I would imagine at least, has evolved a ton from his first couple of times playing, maybe more so than anyone in this cast. Is that too much to say? Like, has really had that drastic of a transformation?
So one specific point about that, because I went down the rabbit hole of watching these secret scenes from Heroes vs. Villains, which is a great season for secret scenes, by the way. You can always find some great stuff in there. But one point that was made quite frequently was, like, the women of that season didn't like the men on the Heroes tribe. They thought that, like, Rupert was obviously very overbearing, James was very bossy, like, Colby was just not really doing what they expected him to do, and they lumped in JT along with that. Like, they felt JT just wasn't being that respectful, and as a brash, like, 25-year-old coming off, as you said, a perfect win in his first season, that does not shock me at all that they would see him that way. Now that he's 32, he's married, you know, maybe he's more respectful in that regard. Maybe he has kind of had a new outlook on life. He's kind of toned in some of that, those attitudes, I suppose. Because you think back to when he was blindsided, on his exit speech, he said, like, never trust a woman or something like that, which, if he carried that philosophy into this season, would be just catastrophically bad for him. There's no way it could possibly end well. However, I'm hoping now that he is like older and wiser and married, that maybe he has a new outlook on things and can approach it in a more balanced way.
Right. And I think just the mere fact that he's 32, and that's why we always talk about, I've always said like 27 to, or 28 to 35-ish probably, is like the golden range to be playing Survivor, where JT is going to have, I would imagine, no issue connecting with anyone on the younger end of the age spectrum. And incidentally, no really young people, no 21, 22-year-olds in this cast that I can see, right? It seems like who's the youngest person is probably, I mean, Andrea is probably very close to the youngest person. Who's even the youngest person in this class? In this, Sierra Easton? Where, and she's 25, 26? Michaela is 25, 26?
I think Sierra's like 27 now or something. It might actually be Michaela.
Yeah, but so I think JT's going to have no issue connecting with the 25, 26 range age people. And then this is definitely a cast with like Sari and Debbie and Ty and Varner and Culpepper, where I think he's going to have, you know, being 32 is a huge leg up versus if he was still 24, 25 or someone in that age range.
Yeah, let's come back to that question of does he need that kind of partner? Because, well, so firstly, do you think he does? And secondly, if he does, do you think he knows that? And thirdly, I suppose, who do you think that's going to be then?
It seems like he is on the lookout for that kind of person based on his pregame interviews. And I would love to see it be Aubrey. And it seems, I think she said that she flagged up that possibility herself. Can you confirm that that is accurate before we continue down this line?
Yeah, she says, quote, "I'll be his Steven. I don't care because I can beat him," which is a bold call, first of all. Like, if like JT won a season unanimously, and you can say, okay, every cast is different, and that one was just especially well suited to JT's form of charm, which there's definitely a case to be made for that. At the same time, though, you've seen that it can work on people. You've seen that some people are susceptible to that, and I think declaring up front that you can beat him is bold. But yeah, if the two of them can team up, that might be my dream team for this season.
Yeah. And I mean, I say that looking at my desktop wallpaper of Tony and Aubrey fist bumping by the well, and I think there are a lot of very Survivor porny combinations of alliances that could go down this season. But that has got to be very high on the list if JT and Aubrey can become the new JT and Steven and really like force their way through this whole game. I think that is almost as good as you can realistically draw it up, just given how likely it is that Tony's going to be gone early.
And the feeling is mutual. JT thinks that he can beat her, but he also says that she, quote, makes good, educated decisions. And then in his Wiggler piece, he says, "I think there are a number of guys I can trust, or at least work with. That's Brad, Malcolm, Troy, as you would expect. I think I can play with those guys, and I think Aubrey might be that person too." So he's already name-checking her as someone who might fill that role. And it seems like he does want that kind of opposite, right? He wants someone to be the Steven and not just a generic partner.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about Sari and that dynamic? Because, like, obviously she could be someone who would be great to bounce ideas off of, but they have this big history together. Like, she, I know, flagged up in her CBS video saying, like, "I know JT and Ozzy are here, and I don't have any lingering resentment towards either of them, but they can't know that, and I know that they can't know that, so that makes it tough for me to trust them."
Right. I don't think they can overcome that. I think JT at least should have enough options that he doesn't need to throw all of his eggs in that basket again. And maybe Sari is desperate enough that she has to extend the olive branch to JT, but I don't know if he's going to accept it.
That's the thing, is I honestly feel like if I was JT and I showed up and I'm looking at this tribe, I don't think it's even close that Sari is the person I want out first if we go to a tribal council.
Gone. Yeah. Like if I can get Sari out of this tribe first and then follow up with like another... obviously, I don't know exactly when the swap's going to be, if there is one, but if I can get Sari out first and follow that up with, I don't know, some other, like, carefully targeted boot, I might just have complete control over my tribe at that point.
Well, until we swap the very next vote. Yeah. But yeah, as far, yeah, but like, that's the thing for me is, JT, and I think this is why we've always, for 5 years now, been talking about him turning on Sari and Heroes versus Villains being smart, is Sari Fields might be the biggest giant killer like in Survivor history. She knows exactly how to play with big meat shields in front of her, and I think JT recognizes that she is the exact kind of player he needs to be extremely worried about, and I don't think he sees that kind of threat level in anyone else in this cast.
Yeah. JT has that Malcolm level of cockiness, because he is saying stuff like, I think I'm going into this as the most underestimated person on the cast. I don't think people are paying any attention to me.
He's right.
I think they think I'm under the radar. Yeah. And then he also says, quote, oh, yeah, people underestimate my social game. And it's like, well, he's talking a big game, but he's not wrong, right? Like, he has done this in the past, and you can forgive him for thinking he can do it again. But with it, for him, it doesn't come across as overtly cocky in the same way that it does with Malcolm, at least to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I was looking at JT, I think he voted for Tony in his pregame vote, but I'm not positive about that.
Yeah, join the club, right?
right. But even in that vote, like, he's like grinning into the camera, and he just looks like the nicest guy in the world as he's voting, like, Tony, I'll see you in hell, or something like that. Not verbatim.
It, like, his facial expressions and everything is so funny too. It literally does look like he just wandered onto the set somehow. like he was just chilling. He was just chilling on the beach with a few beers or something. And he just got lost and wandered onto Survivor somehow.
That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. Now my concern about JT this time is it seems like his big takeaway from Heroes versus Villains is that he didn't do well enough in the challenges, and that his big regret is stepping down from that post or whatever in the round that he got voted out at the merge. And that is, I think, not what I would be recommending for JT. I think he needs to, like, stick with the dad bod philosophy.
Yeah, and so when Wiggler asks him, how do you think you're a game changer, he says, quote, I think I really changed the way people approach a game in terms of challenges. I gave it 110%. Nobody could argue that. And then he follows it up by saying, I'm bringing it all this time, 120%. So he's really, you know, dialing up the notches. But it's weird that he's thinking about his own game explicitly in terms of the challenges in a way that no one else really seems to.
Yeah, I'm bringing it all, because as we know, it all is 120 out of 100.
Well, no, I just mean that, like, I don't think so anyone else on this season, and anyone else who, like, is a big Survivor fan, if you ask them, what do you associate with JT? They wouldn't say, oh yeah, he was this really strong challenge competitor, right? Like,
no.
It's like he's taking an ahistorical view of his own game, almost.
Right, no, I think what people associate with JT is just his, like, effortless social charm and people tripping over themselves to get him to the end and vote for him.
Right, and maybe that would be a sign that he isn't relying on that this season, he doesn't think that it's going to transfer over, and yet we see from his other quotes that he certainly does, so.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to make of that.
Yeah, sorry, I think, despite my concerns about him wanting to, like, go even harder in the challenges, which is always, I think, not the best line to be taking when you are as overtly threatening of a player as JT is, he does seem to recognize that he could use Ozzy and Malcolm, or maybe Brad Culpepper, as a bigger physical threat that he can prop up. So he does seem to be taking, like, the mentality that I would hope to be seeing out of him, of leaving in big targets and taking out, hopefully, like, for his own best interest, these Suri types that see through him.
Yeah, and Ozzy, another person who loves JT, saying, I'd love to play with JT. I think he's kind of a wild card, and I don't know what to expect from him, but I think he might be a trustworthy person, which I guess is true up to a point, right? Like, he did stick close to his Jalapao allies, and it with his core group in Heroes vs. Villains, okay, he betrayed Suri, but that was a specific move to get out someone who he thought was coming for him, and he was, like, loyal to two different groups at the same time, despite them being on opposite sides, which in a way makes him the most loyal person of all, right? Like, he was able to balance that pretty well. So that at least maybe bodes well for him. The other concerns I have is that it seems like his reads on people are a little bit off, or maybe a bit uninformed. So for Andrea, for instance, he says, Andrea, quote, will be loyal and I think I can beat her, which I think is true to a point on both fronts, but we've seen from Caramon that if Andrea feels that she's in danger, that she's paranoid, that loyalty can evaporate very quickly, right? And I think coming into this season, certainly if it, you know, she will be willing to question her loyalty to anyone that she is currently with, even if at the start maybe she doesn't view JT as this kind of threat.
Any imperfect information that JT has about any of these players, I am leaving JT totally blameless, and it's all going to fall on Stephen Fishback for not preparing him adequately.
It's really their fault for not molding their personalities to meet JT's expectations, if
right.
You think about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, Dalton Ross, I think, someone asked him, who were you most surprised by in a negative sense from your interviews? And he said that JT seemed very low energy. So JT, with an exclamation point. or you could have just JT. JT. Just like, you can't do it a minute.
Can we do? I'm going to put an exclamation point after JT all season now.
Yeah, do that with the photo of him just looking completely quizzical and confused. Yeah, but so he does seem to be a lot more reserved almost. He's not going out there and really dazzling people with his good old boy persona. He's just kind of laying back and letting it come to him, which is good. But maybe he is just kind of checked out of it, right? Maybe he is old and washed up. I don't know.
I really feel like even if JT is, for a 32-year-old cattle rancher, old and washed up, I still think he's got to be in there with among the best chances of winning this season, even knowing how dominant he's been in a season before and how many people out there are potentially going to be worried about him.
Yeah, the one person who is most critical of JT is Haley, who says, quote, JT is a slick little devil. He's friends with everybody. I like JT, but I don't see myself working with him. He's too slippery. Which is like, if the strongest indictment of you in the entire cast comes from Haley, then something has gone terribly wrong somewhere, right?
Yeah, like, but I honestly feel like it is more an indictment on this cast that there are not more people saying, oh my God, of course I need to be on the lookout for JT. I would never fall for his good old boy, I'm just a grown-up Tom Sawyer Southern charm. Of course he's going to be on my radar.
Right. In a way, it's better for Haley that she doesn't have that frame of reference, right? Because everyone else has this vague memory of JT as whatever they imagine him to be. And Haley doesn't have that. So if she wants to research JT, not that she necessarily did, but the only way she can do that is to say, okay, I'm going to go and watch certain episodes or certain clips right now and see what I can get from that. And if you watch those with an open mind, you see, okay, this guy is seriously dangerous and I can't trust him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think JT has timed this perfectly, it seems, as far as letting the right amount of space go down between winning and returning, where I think this is something that Sandra had going for her beautifully in Heroes versus Villains, where like she had the reputation as a previous winner, but it had been a while and she wasn't the most impressive winner, and she wasn't really getting in anyone's way. And I think JT could tremendously benefit from having such a long break between playing.
Yeah, so I think JT is perfectly set up to make another deep run. All of these factors seem to be ideal for him. Having said that, I think he's going to blow it. I don't think he's going to do well this season.
Why?
That's my hot take, okay? That's my read. That's the thing which I don't have any justification for, but just that's the sense I get.
Is this the typical Dom Harvey philosophy of if you always have the worst expectations, you can only ever be surprised pleasantly?
Exactly. But also, I just... Maybe it's too good for me to hope for that it's going to work out well for JT, but I'm not seeing it. I think something's going to happen. I think someone might do to him what he did to Suri, and maybe he's not going to see it coming. Or like, I can see JT being like Aris 2.0. I can see him honestly being that.
Okay. I definitely think there are plenty of timelines where JT is recognized as an early obvious threat, and maybe people, once they're out on the beach with him and they get to see how charming he is in person, say to themselves, well, wait a minute, this is, this guy's already won the game by doing this once. What are we doing letting him stay around to do this to us a second time? I definitely think that's in play.
It could also be a Hayden Moss style thing where, like, okay, he is a very capable player, but everyone knows that, and so he's always like scrabbling up from the bottom trying to gain some kind of traction. Or even just like JT has this ironclad grip over a minority alliance, but it is a minority alliance, and so you get to the merge, they lop off the biggest threat from the other side, which of course is going to be JT, and he's the merge boot once again. Like that seems very realistic to me too.
I think Hayden is actually a perfect example to use of how I think JT probably approaches Survivor, like how he certainly did in Heroes versus Villains and how he's going to now, of like, he is a known, tremendously capable player who I think is in there, even if things aren't going his way, all he's looking at is, how can I turn this around to get myself to first place? And Hayden put himself, through a lot of effort into a position where that, one out of three times, Tyson draws the bad rock and Hayden wins the season. And I think that's what JT is going for. Like, one out of whatever percentage of the time, Russell is going to come with us when I give him that idol, and then we are going to take majority and I'm going to be in a crushing spot. And I think that is the right way to play the game when you've already won it and you only care about first place again.
But I do think that was also born of like overconfidence and wanting to establish his own separate strategic credibility from Steven, and wanting to be the guy who, on the biggest season of all time, made the biggest move of all time, right? Like, I don't think you can completely whitewash it. But yeah, I guess the hope is that he doesn't have the same kind of bravado that he had in his first two seasons, but he does have that same kind of winning mentality, just being willing to like cut anyone at any time and always just like having that eye on the prize. And so if he can combine the good elements of his first season and arguably his second season with that kind of more mature experienced look on the world, then that could be a winning recipe once again. But as I said, my bold call for the season is I don't see it happening.
So explain to me why you picked JT number one overall in our draft and why you sold out for him in our auction draft.
Because I think, like, on paper, all of this should be working out well for him. This should be perfect. But I have a bad feeling about this, okay? And I guess I have a bad feeling about most things, but with this in particular, I just don't... I will be very excited to watch JT. I'm sure that he's back, but I will let you get your hopes up before they get dashed cruelly against the rocks.
All right, I am definitely a believer. Juicy thick forever. Very much looking forward to it.
All right, so I believe there are no names left in the basin. So do we want to move on to some general thoughts on the season then?
Yeah, well, before we move on to general thoughts on the season, we didn't do this in our Mana Tribe preview, but we should do this. We'll do them after we quickly touch on this Nuku tribe. What do you think about just this mix of people? I know we flagged up many times this Suri versus Alpha Dogs alliance, but what do you think about how these relationships might actually play out once they hit the beach?
So it feels like a lot of the star power is on the other tribe. So you do have Suri, you have like Ozzy and JT and so on, but it feels like a lot of the attention naturally is drawn towards a tribe with like Sandra and Tony on it, right? Or like that is a tribe which seems to be getting most of the hype and the discussion and so on. And I'm not even sure which tribe I want to see go to tribal early, because I want more than one episode of Tony, and I can't guarantee getting that if he has to go there himself. But at the same time, like this tribe, you know, maybe it's less interesting or more interesting. I don't really know.
I am always rooting for Tony to not be going to Tribal Council during these early episodes. I want him having time to find that initial idol and then swapping on to the new beach and finding yet another idol that's still at, like, I think that is the dream scenario. Is it's like day 7, Tony's on his second beach and he already has two idols now on a 6-person tribe, and now things get really exciting. So I will always be rooting for Tony to be staying safe during these early episodes.
Yeah, but honestly, I think... So my prediction for Nuku, and tell me how much you agree with this, is I think that majority alliance is going to be at least two of Culpepper, JT, and Ozzy, just in that like power structure, with Andrew and Sierra bolted onto that, and then maybe Ty going along for the ride, or Sarah working her way in there somehow. But I think like Siri and Zeke are probably the two people who just are not going to gain any purchase.
Yeah, I think I'm probably on board with that. I think Suri and Zeke would probably be the ones that I really have my eye on here as the possible first boots from this tribe.
Yeah, I could see like if two of the three guys team up and go after the other one. So like JT and Brad go after Ozzy, or JT and Ozzy go after Brad. Like maybe that happens, but I think it would be easy enough to rally the three of them all behind. We can keep the tribe strong. We can vote out Suri, who two of the three of us desperately want gone. And then Zeke is this unknown quantity. We can vote him out. And that's not going to ruffle any feathers, I don't think.
Give me, if this tribe loses both of the pre-swap immunity challenges, I will say that both Ty and Sierra Don Thomas are essentially 0% to be gone before the swap. Do you think there's anyone else who is never, ever leaving before the swap?
I kind of want to say Andrea, actually.
Yeah, she would probably be my number three pick, actually.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess the others, there's always a risk that like Suri is going to get revenge on JT or something, which would be great, to be fair. Like if she does that, fair play, I will enjoy it. It's probably going to be executed very well and make great TV. But yeah, I think like those middle of the road players are should almost certainly be safe.
Yeah, and I feel like a calm, collected Sarah Lucina would definitely be safe in this spot, but I am not positive that that's what we're going to see out of Sarah Lucina.
Yeah, I like that with Sarah, there's always the possibility that she could just completely flip out and go into president Sarah mode again. So, Yeah, I mean, so Sarah should be safe, but who knows whether she will be. In that
right, stranger things have definitely happened. So I guess let's move over to the Mana tribe, since we did not talk about this in the 2.5 hours that we spent on the Mana tribe the first time around. What do you think about how this power structure is going to end up shaping up here? And I think, for me at least, to just kick it off, I would imagine that Malcolm is going to be at the center of this.
Yeah, I send your prayers in for Tony, because he will have to pull off something very impressive to make his way out of this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, like, I have so much faith that Tony is probably a favorite against the entire tribe cumulatively to get that first idol. Like, he is going to be out there doing nothing but looking for the idol. He knows how critical that is.
He might also be a favorite cumulatively to be the first boot as well.
That's probably true.
I guess Sandra's in there, so it could go on her instead, but like, he knows that he is a March man, for sure.
Right, I mean, it was, for a while, very close between Tony and Sandra in the leader in the clubhouse for who's getting the most Dalton Ross pregame vote-out votes. Tony has gotten, like, the last four now. Has gotten half of the votes now have been for Tony.
Yeah, he is running away with the lead. So I guess my question is, for the two of them, Sandra and Tony, if one of them is voted out first, or voted out early, does that mean the other one is therefore in a good spot because they were probably in that alliance that voted them out? Or is it going to be, we're going to isolate the two winners and they're automatically going to be on the outs, and so if Tony goes first, Sandra has to work her way back and then vice versa?
I don't think their success is mutually exclusive, or if one of them does well, the other one, or one of, if one of them is gone early, the other one must do well. I definitely don't think that at all. I think they are both going to be totally marked the entire time that they're in the game, and that's why I'm so set on Tony needing the idol to be in there with a real fighting chance, and that's why two idols would just be the greatest thing in the world if he can swap onto that that third tribe beach. But yeah, as for everyone else, I really feel like Malcolm is going to be almost every single time at the center of the power hub, and I would imagine that Aubrey and Michaela are also going to be in there quite a bit.
Yeah, we think just Michaela has to be, right? Like,
yeah. Well, maybe not. Maybe she just survives these narrowly and then swaps into a totally different situation.
Yeah. But she will be there. If after all of this, Michaela is a second boot somehow, then okay, the editors have officially won. I will give up trying to analyze any of this altogether. But yeah, I think Caleb should be safe, right? Like, who is even coming for Caleb?
Right. Okay. Well, let's do that then. Let's go through who is never, ever leaving in these first two rounds. I think Aubrey, there's at least a chance she leaves, although I think it's extremely unlikely.
I think there's a chance. Sierra, again, a chance that she leaves just because she has done so much work to establish this reputation for herself. Haley is an interesting one. So in terms of like who's the biggest threat, who do we really want to get out, it's not going to be her. But if it's so chaotic that they're just casting around for anyone, just any name to write down, someone can throw out Haley and not get any backlash for that.
Yeah.
So that could be a thing. And I imagine if there was any pre-gaming going on, she was not really a part of that either.
Well, she would have to know who the people were to be pre-gaming with them. So
does help. So yeah, Michaela, we think, is going to be safe. Sandra and Tony, like, who even knows? As much as I hate to say it, I think Troy is safe.
I think you're probably right, unless he really makes an ass out of himself, which is possible.
Yeah, certainly within his range, but despite what he might tell you, he is not nearly threatening enough to be an early target on this group. And then Varna could easily like overplay his way out again, right, despite what he's saying preseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, Varna is the male Sarah Lucina of this tribe, where if he just shuts his mouth, he should never, ever, ever leave here. But I don't know if he's going to be able to do that. So I would say, yeah, Malcolm, probably Aubrey, and Caleb and Michaela would be by far the only people that I think are definitely going to be safe, even if this tribe loses both of the immunity challenges.
Yeah, the other thing, though, as you flagged up previously, was Varna is not good in challenges. And he's saying he's been going to the gym every day and using CrossFit religiously and so on. But despite all of that, I think after Sandra, he is maybe the second weakest person physically on the group. So that could be a mark against him, too.
Yeah, although it definitely remains to be seen how much challenge strength is really going to be playing a role in how people end up voting in these early tribal councils. We'll definitely see about that. Dumb. What more do we want to be saying about this Survivor 34 cast? Whether, I guess we should talk about the twists a little bit, which is we do apparently know via, of course, Gordon Holmes, the great Gordon Holmes. He talked with Jeff, and Jeff said idols are going to be entered into the game in various different ways. So maybe I would guess that each camp is going to start with an idol, and then another one may get thrown in at a challenge, like around the merge. One may get thrown in even at a tribal council. Who knows? We'll see. So a lot of different things going on here, apparently, as far as idols and how those are going to be introduced to the game, which I actually really like, not having them constantly introduced the same way.
Yeah, I love that variety, and I love that you have that variety even within the context of the same season. So, you know, episode one, we see someone looking for an idol, maybe even find an idol, and there's no guarantee when the next one's going to come up or what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, so we have these two sailing tribes, and then those are going to split into three. So let's say, so like, it, does the same clue have to apply to both tribes? Is it going to be the same kind of process, or is it going to be different from that?
They're going to be tribes. They're always tribe-specific clues that they give them. It's not like you can get swapped onto. It's not like if you get the clue on day one and you don't find the idol for a while and then swap onto a new beach, that clue is useless as far as I can tell. You're not going to get any help on the new beach from that clue.
Sure, but it's not going to be like, so one idol on one tribe is hidden underneath the flag or something, and then the other one is in a generic location, right? It's going to be the same type of thing that you have to do.
I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be like in China, where they both the idols were the little placards on the like on those little buildings that for whatever reason they had near their shelter. I don't think it's going to be like that, where if you find the idol, like Kageyan would be a good example. The first idols were buried like in these little bodies of water at all of the camps. And I think like Tony, when he got swapped on to the old beauty camp, he knew it was going to be in the water or something like that. I don't think there's going to be anything like that in play of once you know where one idol is, you have a huge leg up in finding the other ones. Like, I think that has been almost an issue in seasons past. And that's, it seems not going to be in play this time around. So I definitely am looking very forward to that. Do you like the idea of possibly an idol being hidden at Tribal Council?
I love it. Absolutely love it. I'm now thinking, like, my mind's whirring going through all the possibilities for it, but like, it could be like, where, like, you could just have it in plain sight, right?
No,
like,
it'll
say,
I'll tell you where it's going to be. Maybe it's not going to be, very unlikely that it's going to be here the more that I think about it, but where it should be is the far side of the fire, on the other side that they can't see as they are sitting in the seats, but it's very easy for someone to get up and just go to the other side of the fire pit and pull out an idol and show it to everyone.
I like the idea of, okay, everyone knows that there is an idol there. It's there in plain sight. Who's going to have the temerity to just go up and grab it, right?
Okay, but I mean, I think that becomes a race to, once you see that happen, suddenly who gets to enter Tribal Council first becomes a huge piece of the puzzle, I would imagine. Like,
well,
if I see that they're hiding idols at Tribal Council, I am refusing to not be the first one to go into Tribal Council.
Well, okay, so it could be, it's in a location which is not immediately obvious, but when you're all seated there and you've got your torches and everything, Jeff says, oh, by the way, you know, and just like indicates it. The other, so like the, in terms of like hidden locations, the one thing that makes sense to me is at the voting box, right? Like somewhere bound up in that. We don't know exactly what the Tribal Council is going to look like yet, but
that's,
you can
call,
imagine someone goes up there thinking that they're writing down someone's name for the last time, and it doesn't even matter who they vote for, and then suddenly, right, like they get a new lease on life. Like, that could be fun.
I mean, I really don't think it can be, as much as I agree with you that it'd be fun if it was in some public location that they could all see, I think there is way too likely a chance that it becomes a race or a fight over who got possession of it first or whatever. I think that's way too unruly versus,
yeah,
if someone knows it's in a very easy to go pick up spot that no one else can see. That's why I went to on the other side of the fire. Like, it's just behind a rock there or something. I think that is what you want. Like, someone can just get up, be in the middle of the Tribal Council and produce an idol essentially out of thin air. I think it's exactly what you want. And right in the middle of that set is a really clean shot if it's right on the other side of the fire.
What if the idol is just hidden, like, underneath Jeff's cap or something? It's just like, on Jeff's person, you have to go, like, do a TSA pat-down of Jeff to try and find it.
No, what it is you rip Jeff's necklace off of him, and that's the idol. That's the...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. Jeff is going to be wearing the idol, and it's whoever goes and takes it off of him. Yeah, all right. So, Dom, I guess the only thing left to be doing is locking in our official winner picks. I know I have been on Michaela for a very long time. That is not going to change for me. But what are you thinking as far as now is the time? Who are you finally? You drafted JT number one overall. You bid a bunch of money on him in the auction, and now you think he's going to be an early boot. Final chance to get your thoughts on the records for who's actually going to do well in this season.
Just give me Malcolm. It's so boring, but whatever. Just give me Malcolm.
Oh, my God. You are every single person. This is like this is like picking Mari after you found out that three quarters of Twitter was on Mari.
All right, then. If I have to be different, then I guess give me Andrea.
Okay.
I suppose.
You don't seem convinced at all about this Andrea pick. I'm going to be honest.
I'm not remotely convinced. Not convinced whatsoever. But that... I've got to make a decision. That's what I'm going with. Lock it in. And if I get it right, then I never equivocated at all. I was in it from the start. Nostradamus strikes again.
Okay. Very good stuff. Dom, we have covered both of these tribes now pretty thoroughly. I hope people feel prepared entering this new season. I am extraordinarily pumped for it. I can't wait. Any other calls or predictions or whatever you want to get on the record before we tick off?
Yeah, I think I've talked myself out. There's nothing left to say. Except for that, so in just over a week, I will find out for the first time in 5 years if you are actually a real person or not, or if I've just been catfished in some incredibly elaborate way this entire time.
Yeah, I mean, so much for everyone thinking that this podcast was just me talking to myself and doing a British accent half the time. We are going to be in Boston for the premiere, and then again at... in New York City at the Live Know-It-Alls for episode 3. So if you're going to be around either of those places, definitely get at us. I'm certainly very much looking forward to it. I can't believe you're going to be in America. I can't believe Game Changers is finally happening. It seemed so long. It seems like it's been so long since this has been in the works, and I am super stoked for all of it to finally start.
Yeah, I was mad initially that Hunted ended up delaying the season by like 4 weeks, but it's actually helped to really ramp up the hype, I think. So I guess if there's anything that we can be glad for Hunted for, it might be that.
Yeah. And all right, so we have probably just one other extra podcast coming for you before the season premiere starts, but who knows, maybe something else will pop up. Until then, though, you can be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. Enjoy the season 34 premiere, and we will be back shortly to be talking about that once we see how it all plays out. So until then, take care, everybody.